You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, House passes marriage equality bill with only 47 Republican votes. That's one quarter of the Republican caucus in the House. Biden administration weighs emergency powers to protect the distribution of abortion pills. Secret Service says some texts from January 6th probably missing forever. Then they chuckled. Then they said, I'm not smiling. You're the one who's smiling. I'm only smiling because you were smiling. That's why I was smiling before. I wasn't. It's not funny. No, of course. Over a dozen Congress people arrested in an abortion protest at Capitol Hill. Senate en route to passing the semiconductor subsidy bill with some extra science. House stalled on coronavirus aid, wrangling on assault weapon ban. Fake Georgia electors deemed targets of the Georgia DA criminal probe, and just breaking, Rudy Giuliani has been ordered to testify on August 9th, before the Georgia grand jury investigating Trump's possible criminal meddling in the 2020 election. Maryland's primary takeaways. QAnon wins the GOP nomination for governor. And Apex, $7 million, record-breaking money. House former Congresswoman Donna Edwards. And mysteriously, the British inflation rate is almost identical to the United States inflation rate.
What?
The special relationships.
Bizarre, since they didn't give a tax credit, child tax credit to their citizens. I mean, they already do and have, but you won't have Bill de Blasio to kick around anymore as he drops out of the New York 10th Congressional District race. And J.D. Vance, head in the polls, begs his voters to cover his loan to his primary campaign. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. And the more on today's Majority Report is actually going to be the vast majority of today's show is going to be dedicated to remembering Michael Brooks, who passed away on this day 2 years ago. He about a little bit less than a month shy of his 39th, what would have been his 39th birthday, August 13th, I believe it was. And so what we're going to do today is basically have some folks on who were good friends of his and some family members, and we'll probably do a little bit of this ourselves. And just play, folks I think are going to come on, maybe they'll play a clip or two or not, and then just share their thoughts about Michael. I mean, the idea is that we have a lot of folks who watch the show who were, you know, certainly very familiar with Michael and, you know, loved Michael. We have some new viewers who I want to encourage to go back and check out Michael's show, The Michael Brooks Show. You can find it on YouTube. We'll put links to that as well. But it's definitely worth your while to go back, check out clips of Michael. I'll let our guests talk about what the, you know, his implications. But joining me as always, Emma Vigeland.
Hello.
Michael had you on his program many times in the past. you know, on the course of the Michael Brooks show. I think you guys did some live shows too together.
Yeah, we did the Philly live show, which was pretty fun.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was my first experience of being pretty drunk on stage. Because those green room beers really got us. I don't know about you, Matt.
Yeah, of course. It's every time for me.
But yeah, I mean, that was such a great time, and it is like, you know, it's interesting to look back on that, not knowing Matt as well as I know him now, and, you know, thinking what Michael would think about all of this. You know, it's sad, but...
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the live shows, because that was, like, I was, after Michael passed, that was the major solace to me, is that Michael got to experience selling out those live shows, and, like, also talking to Lula and Cornell, and we hit all the people that he wanted, like, we looked up to, and we would just talk about, like, to... like, you should read this book. And then we'd have those people on, and they looked at Michael as a peer, and he got to experience that. So that's what made me feel good, you know, following the tragedy.
So on the program today, we're going to have, and I don't know if I have the whole list in front of me, but we're going to have on the show, Leisha Brooks is going to be on very shortly. We're going to have Joshua Kahn Russell is going to be on. Wozni Lombre, we're going to have Bhaskar Sankara is going to join us, Ben Burgess, David Griscom, who co-produced the Michael Brooks Show with Matt Leck. I'm not missing anybody, right? That's everybody? Okay. And then, you know, we'll do maybe a couple of clips as a normal show afterwards, take your IMs. Left of the Box on the IM writes, I never knew it was possible to miss someone so much I've never met. Michael changed the direction of my life. I wish I had the chance to thank him for everything he did for me. Thank you to everyone for the Majority Report and all the wonderful community built around Majority Report. You make differences in the lives of others. Love you all. Rest in power, Michael. You influenced me to this day. The world needs to center on compassion for humanity as opposed to how it is a violent battle for control. Rot in the pig, says. Let's just play. I'm going to play. Well, you know what? I'll get to these. I get some emails from some listeners. You know, I'll read these on. These are not about Michael. I'll read them on Friday. But let's just do this really quick one. The clips I have about Michael, and I want to thank DJ Dan Arkey, who was super helpful in not super helpful. He did it, or they did it. Sending some clips for us, and I think we may, if we have time, play the compilation from the live show that DJ Dan Arkey did. But I just wanted to do for me. Having Michael on the show was just fun. And I felt like, and some of these clips, there was one or two of these clips. I was like, oh, I'm actually being funny. And one of the things that it reminded me of was that cracking him up was, and I know Matt would back me up on this, cracking him up was fun. And that's a fun, you know, that makes it super fun as a comedian, that is like where, and with my friends from comedy, that is basically all we do. We don't really spend too much time doing anything other than trying to make each other laugh. My son Saul is here. Isn't that right, Saul? What have you do? You drawn all over yourself? Okay, that's good. But here is one of the things I definitely miss about Michael. And for me, it's, you know, the other people are better suited and to talk about his politics. I mean, certainly the thing that he brought to this show was an analysis and of foreign policy that, you know, we just don't have anymore. I didn't have before he was on. It's not inconceivable we would have it again, but there's very few people I've come across who were able to provide the type of foreign policy analysis that he could. And was as well versed, but also from a leftist perspective, I mean, that was the thing about Michael. He could do a lot of different things that very few people could do, even any individual ones of those things. But here, let's just play this one, clip number one, because I do miss Michael mocking me. Mr. Trump pressed him on whether it would be honest loyalty.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be so hypocritical, because how many times have we been regaled with, okay, honest loyalty?
No, I mean,
I want full loyalty.
I have asked all of you.
Everyone
to take
needs
a loyalty
to burn a picture
oath.
Of Jimmy Dore in front of me right now.
Wow. That's real, isn't it? That's real.
And then you rub the ashes on your hands, and then we prick blood together. It's like,
no, but in my defense.
I like Kelly in the background saying, oh, God.
Yeah, exactly.
I also like how Michael's impression of you is also just fairly similar to your Chuck Schumer voice.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, it is. It's actually it's the guy from the Jerky Boys. And that he did. I mean, there was a couple that he did that were, you know, were deep cuts. But for us older people, we realize that it's doing. But it was really more the choice. All right. I want to welcome to the program Michael's sister, Leisha Brooks, who, you know, has been sort of maintaining the Michael Brooks show catalog. And Leisha, thanks for joining us today. I mean, it's obviously it's a hard anniversary for all of us. I know how hard it is, obviously, for you. And do we have her? Oh, let's bring her on. I'm sorry. Oh, do we need to take a break?
We
okay,
got it.
There she is. Sorry, Leisha.
That's okay. Hi.
You know, we just played a clip of Michael mocking me. Which is something I really miss, and I know how much he loved doing. thanks for joining us. We're here with Emma Vigeland.
Hey, Leisha.
We've done this obviously a couple of times. I know how hard it is for you, but I don't know. Do you have a clip you want to play, or do you want to?
Yeah, I have a clip I want to play. I kind of just wanted to tell the Majority Report audience a little bit about the documentary I'm making on Michael's life and work. And basically, I think, you know, some people watching have probably followed this, but one of the things I kind of like delved back into was like Michael as like a little kid. And at a really young age, like age 8, he called into a local talk show and he gave like a prediction about the 1992 Democratic primary. And this was at a point when like no one thought Bill Clinton was going to win this primary. And Michael obviously was a Jerry Brown, you know, supporter. But anyhow, he calls into the show. He gives an alias, so it's a little confusing. But I would love to play the clip of that tape if we have it up.
All right, great. And wait, when did he actually make the call?
I think it was like, I mean, I think it was 92. Is that
it
right?
It would have been in 92.
Yeah.
I'm curious at like what point in that, because I remember that primary.
Well, I guess it's like whenever the New York primary was coming up.
Okay.
You could Google it.
Number, hello, you're on WNNZ.
Hello, this is Steven from Ashfield. And I just got it, I think Clinton's going to win New York by a squeak.
You know, I happen to agree with your analysis there. I think that Clinton has pulled some rabbits out of the hat in recent days. His appearance on the Phil Donahue show the other day was a brilliant performance, where Donahue kept trying to ask him about, you know, whether he inhaled his marijuana and had an affair. And finally, the audience booed Donahue and said, look, we want to hear about education and Medicaid and how you're going to fix the economy. We don't want to hear about this junk anymore. But what do you base your analysis on, sir?
Well, I was hoping that Brown, I'm hoping that Brown wins it. I just think that it's kind of like Clinton's an idiot, but, and most of the people in New York, you know, are kind of funked up, but so if he's going to go in New York, you know, he's going to get voted for.
You know, you've been really been following this race. What's your first name?
My Steven?
Steven. And are you in school,
Very
Steven?
Very convincing.
The improv got better.
No, I'm homeschooled.
You're homeschooled. How old are you?
Oh, I'm great. It's going great.
How old are you?
I'm 8 years old.
You're 8 years old, you're homeschooled, and you can discuss the presidential race more intelligently than more adults. Well, I'd say that's a good argument for homeschooling.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad to hear from you, Stephen, and you keep it up, and give me a call next week, and we'll see how good your prediction came.
Okay, bye.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Bye.
Yeah, so awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun to discover that. Because, you know, essentially there's like so much of Michael's work kind of like strewn across the internet, but there's like no like cohesive, like one place you can kind of go. And a lot of people post his passing have gotten really interested in kind of trying to like learn more. And we're doing this thing where we re-air the old episodes every week. And you can see that on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. We're up to episode 59 next Tuesday. But the idea behind the documentary is just to kind of have this like one place where you can kind of see like the, you know, evolution arc of Michael's work.
And do you have a sense? I mean, it's really just going to go as it goes, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've started interviews. We did kind of like step one was I did this podcast, like mini podcast, which is on the Patreon, patreon.com/TMBS. And it was called The Brief Wondrous Life of Michael Brooks. It's not like done, but a lot of episodes have been recorded. And the idea was to kind of like get a head start on like how many different, you know, people Michael kind of like worked with or developed his kind of analysis and worldview, like as collaborators. Sam came on, hopefully Matt and David and Emma will come on as well. And so like that was kind of like the bulk of pre-production. And I've just started in-person interviews. I had two of his really good friends from, he did 1 year at Bennington College. So that was like obviously a pretty interesting time in his life.
Michael did?
Yeah, he did 1 year at Bennington. Him and Donna Tartt have that.
I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah. He basically didn't have a call, like spoilers for the documentary. He didn't have like a really good high school transcript because he was kind of like homeschooled and he didn't have like the right. So he kind of had this idea that if he went to Bennington, they didn't care about grades at all. He could then transfer to a more academic college. And that's exactly
kept
what
he that
did.
On the DL. I don't think he, I don't, told
yeah,
me.
I don't think it was something he, it was not like the happiest time, but. It definitely was comedically fruitful. And I think, you know, Bennington's been described as like the school for like the dumb and rich, and Michael's not dumb and rich, to quote his friend Keith Hendershot. And so I feel like that might've really cemented some of his like worldviews. And like, I just feel like that experience was, I don't know, impactful, but not necessarily happy.
Right. Wow. Oh, that's interesting. That tracks. And then what I think people don't know too is that he spent his junior at Bates studying abroad. Was it junior year? I think it was, right?
It was either junior or sophomore. His friend Luke Mayville, who I think maybe some of you have seen on the Majority Report or TMBS, he's doing a lot of great work in Idaho. That's where he met Luke, and they studied in Ankara. And that again was like, I think another pretty significant experience. I mean, it's so funny going back because like talking to people about politics at that time, it's like, you know, being like a liberal for like a lot of college students meant like supporting John Kerry. I mean, Michael did well, you know, people are going to like burn me down online, but Michael did work on the Kerry campaign. Like it's interesting to go back and see like this. I think a lot of people have this notion of his politics in the last 3 years. And like they grew and they developed and his like thinking grew and developed and his analysis grew and developed. And I think it's kind of important to like put that out there because I feel like the internet's so punishing towards people. Like if you're not like up to snuff on like how things are now, if you ever like, you know, took time to like maybe get to where you are now, I feel like it's like really frowned upon.
Right. I think Michael's politics really began to develop when he started doing his own show. I mean, I think like probably in the year before you know, where they really sort of were most like at his death. He started, I think, probably a year before starting his own show. And they really started to develop that.
The thing I've been discovering is it was like always there, and like the lived experience of like growing up in poverty in America just like made like just this indelible mark on like worldview. And I just feel like it kind of took him having his own show to like really have this confident platform where that was just 100% like he was the guiding force of the political avenue. I think it was always there. Just the like, I don't know, packaging and clarity grew.
Yeah. And I think also in some respects, the language of the day sort of,
totally,
you know, that's, I mean, that's how people's politics are formed, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have these sort of thoughts or ideas that are floating around in you. And it's not until it intersects with either and experiences, not until it intersects with new stuff that you read, new people that you listen to, or, you know, new opportunities or changes in society that begin to give, like, you know, allow for a language to exist. I mean, he wasn't, his politics didn't change, I don't think, radically. I think they just developed into what they were developing into. And prior to that, his focus had been on foreign policy in many respects. And in fact, when he came on to the show, he had been writing for Talking Points Memo, I think, a little bit. I don't know how much he had done, but a little bit. And he was going to go to the LSD, I feel like.
Yeah.
And then he just, like, at one point I remember going like, dude, aren't you, what are you, like, aren't you going to LSE? Like, what are you still here for? And he's like, yeah, no, I'm putting it off. And I think around then too, he was hosting a show for Reza Aslan's media, which was a show of like exclusively about foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's like so many different like little chapters in Michael's life, and it's been really, I don't quite have the language. I guess being able to like channel my grief into a project like gives me like a lot of purpose, and so I feel really grateful to have that. But it's definitely, I don't know, it's like a mix. It kind of feels like I'm keeping him alive, and it's always exciting to sort of talk to someone new and hear new stories. But I feel like the kind of default expression is like, it's been really exciting. It's been really fun. It's like, well, no, not that. But right. It does feel good to get to continue to, I guess, yeah, it really feels like keeping him alive.
I think that's, you know, I think, you know, part of the reason, you know, goal in doing this is to both celebrate his life, but also to like, allow people to either get reintroduced to him or get introduced to him for the first time, because particularly, you know, particularly the work that he did on his show, you know, in those last 2 or 3 years has, I think, a lot of resonance going forward for people, you know. And I'm, for me, it's fun to like look back on the comedy stuff, because it's just sort of like it's like watching videos of me, of myself going on a roller coaster, or, you know, some other, like, you know, like, a water slide or something. It's just fun. But I think, you know, like there's a lot for folks to, that is usable and relevant, you know, today. And I think tomorrow as well.
Yeah. That's kind of been like the purpose of the Re-Air project, which I do as much for myself as like everyone else, which is, it's just a little daunting. There's just so much content. And so if you can kind of like listen every week as you would have if you were currently a fan of TMBS, which a lot of people, like I said earlier, only found out about the show after he had passed, you are usually like every week I learn something or I'm reminded of something I had previously learned. And like, yes, the humor slaps. It is still... So am I allowed to, I can swear on YouTube.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Now I don't have to, but it's just so funny.
Saul is here in the office. You will owe him a buck, but you can do it.
I'll mail in a dollar and support the U.S. Postal Service. The final clip I brought in, if we want to play it, was from his last live stream, which, again, is kind of something that's sort of had virality and gone around the internet a bunch. But I guess, like, the next chapter of Michael's work, which we'll never really get, it kind of seems like he was sort of starting to articulate on the show towards the end. And, you know, Ken Wilber's politics are a little bit questionable, or I think Michael would just say not good. But his, like, structure of integral theory, which is something that I am not the best at describing, and you can look up, but kind of like weaving multiple kind of different thoughts, different quadrants of life into one, like, way of, like, analyzing the world, I feel like was something Michael was, like, starting to sort of come up with his own version of. He was just so kind of focused on creating a set of politics that, like, truly changed material conditions for people, but also, like, was accessible and wasn't elitist or exclusionary or, like, competitive. And I feel like on this live stream, I kind of want to, like, play these last couple minutes, because I feel like what he's talking about is still so, you know, true and important. And it's also just, like, now this live stream is kind of his goodbye. It's something I hold very dear. So I just wanted to share those last couple minutes.
And then we start to have this perspective of wanting to have some flexibility in how we look at things and a deep tolerance, like the tolerance that someone like Pepe Mujica talks about. Not a kind of, you know, yeah, well, you just got to tolerate everybody. It's deeper. Because, like, also ultimately you do. It's another dynamic. Tolerate everything. You have battles in politics, but you want to understand the engine of different worldviews. And in that mix, he's including, and metamodernism in certain ways points to this, and certainly, you know, the Jeremy Johnson, the contemplative work. And at its best, some connection to a spiritual practice or any type of conscientious cultivation of empathy that we're all trying and we're all failing, that's the point, that also cultivates the self-compassion, is going to give us some of the capacity to have some of the sort of flexibility of mind and emotions to move in between worldviews, pivot in between them, and start to create some of that synthesis, that sort of real range of empathy and intellect. So I hope this made some sense, guys. I'm using these things to, you know, formulate the stuff that I'm really thinking about for, like, future books and just stuff that I care about and want to share, something that is important to me. I'm not into the whole quackery whatever. I mean, I have plenty of criticisms of Wilber, but that's actually exactly what I'm talking about. Even just that, like, that you can, that work cannot just be reduced to, like, the online quack library or whatever. We got to figure out how to think through things in a much more nuanced way and see human beings, particularly at an individual level, in a much more nuanced way. Acceptance doesn't mean that you're not making distinctions. I'll wrap this up. And I will wish each and every one of you all my very best. Please treat yourselves well, treat each other better, treat each other well, treat yourself better. Log off if you can. Much love to all of you. Stay safe, stay strong, be well. Much love, people.
That's nice.
Yeah, there's a little bit of, if you look up the, like, Michael Brooks final live stream, there's a 15-minute version, and there's some, like, little jump cuts, and he wasn't censored or edited postmortem. He just plugs his Patreon, like, 18 times throughout.
I was gonna say, I was honestly, I was like, And don't forget the Patreon.
And so I had to get it down for Instagram or like, so I forget. I was trying to get it down for something on social media and I was like trying to find cuts and I was like, oh, well, I just like lift all the Patreon shout outs. Got to type 15 folks.
Yeah, that's what I would have said to him. Like, hey, dude, congratulations. You didn't say you talked about your Patreon for almost 3 minutes. And that is funny. But that's a great message. You know, to, and folks should basically, again, take this opportunity, head over to, TMBS, the YouTube channel and, you know, work your way backwards or work your way forwards, and, find clips, send them around. There's been couple of clips that Michael have had, and I think we're going to be playing one or two that have gone viral since his death. Mm-hmm. That I mean, in a big, big way. And so a lot of this stuff is still, you know, like I say, very, very relevant. And I think he was definitely headed in a place where, like, that type of clip is, I think, shows the you know, that's going to be that's what we call evergreen in terms of like. Being meaningful for people, regardless of what era we're in.
Totally. Yeah, I just wanted to also shout out and thank Danny at Body Politic Media, who's been helping me with like clips and editing the re-airs. And yeah, thank you to everyone in the Majority Report audience and like across the the online left, whatever that means nowadays, for just their, you know, just there's a lot of like really caring, thoughtful people that I feel like I've met digitally over the last 2 years that give me optimism about just humans and the world. So thank you guys for all your support.
Alicia, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah.
Bye, Matt. Bye, Emma. Bye, Sam.
Bye-bye. Do we need to take a break? Okay, before we take a break, let me just read this. Tim from Minneapolis. I did not start regularly watching MR until after Michael passed away, but I can't encourage folks enough to check out the re-airs of the Michael Brooks Show and to consider becoming a patron to the Michael Brooks Legacy Project for the post-game reruns. They have an evergreen quality, and it's been a good opportunity to reflect on that time. Damien, someone tried to bring up Michael to Hassan in order to score some points, and Hassan said that it was not appropriate to weaponize Michael's memory in that way. I thought that was nice, yes. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Joshua Kahn Russell. We are back, Sam Cedar, Evan Vigeland, on the Majority Report. What's going on with the setup we have here, guys? On the we have a huge guest here, like literally physically
towering over us.
Joshua Kahn Russell. He was friends with Michael for a long time, but also, I mean, through his activism and organizing, and was Michael's go-to when he had questions about organizing. And he is now, he is calling us from the jungle, literally. So he's on WhatsApp, and that's why he's towering over us right now. Joshua, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here. Yeah, I'm in the Peruvian Amazon right now. And so to get on the show, I had to hike out of the jungle and then take a boat down a river and then ride on the back of a motorbike down a long dirt road to get to a city where there's a hotel. So I'm in the hotel lobby trying to get Wi-Fi. So I hope it holds.
And that is actually not a joke.
Yeah.
That is all we should say true. And I think you told me, like, you and Michael were planning a trip, right? I mean, to do this trip. Is that right?
Yeah. That's literally true that I just did all that. Yeah. This was Michael and I had been talking for years about coming down here for a healing trip. And there's a relationship that I have here with a community that I support people on kind of healing trips down here. And so it was about 6 months before he died that we had even bought the tickets. And then he got the opportunity at that time to go interview Lula. And he was like, okay, I'm going to do that instead. We'll do the trip next time. And so he never made it down. But when I come down here, I'm always thinking of him and glad to actually be down here reflecting on him, you know, to be down here on the anniversary of his death.
Well, I appreciate your, you know, the tremendous effort that you're making to join us. So tell us a little bit about the clip that you chose to share. I don't know if you want to intro it or just talk about why you picked that clip.
Yeah, maybe I'll set it up and then we can talk about why afterwards.
Sure.
But so the clip is from a post game. And it was after on the main show, we had talked about how to build a pressure campaign. So not like an electoral campaign, but a campaign where you're pressuring an institution or a power holder for demands, like shutting down a pipeline or a fracking well or getting a bank to pull funding from a project. And so in the main show, I had shared this planning tool that helps you like map your terrain. And so the quick summary of the tool was it helps you identify who are your active allies, you know, people who are actively organizing alongside you, who are your passive allies, people who agree with you, but they're not engaged. They don't need to be like convinced of the thing you're working on. They need to be convinced that you have like a reason for them to participate, you know, people who are neutrals, people who are your passive opposition, people who, you know, disagree with you, but they're not organizing against you. And then your active opposition, the people that you're fighting. So that's the setup from the main show. And then the post game, we took that concept and just had a lot of fun with it. So that's what this clip is.
All right, great. Now you're not going to be able to see this clip, but you'll be able to hear it. If all goes right with our tech here.
You'll have to minimize Joshua Bradley for a split second there.
Don't minimize me.
All right.
There we go.
Oh, there we go. We'll get you. We'll still have a little bit of you. All right. Here we go. Oh, wait. Push it. Let's see Michael there, though, if we can. Yeah, just...
I'm sure I'm like this less of a Simpsons head than many people in the audience, but I know the characters.
I know. That's all right. Yeah, yeah. So let's say that we live in Springfield, we're in the Simpsons.
All right, pause it for one second. I'm sorry. We need to get a little more volume on Michael and less on Joshua. Just bear with us, Joshua. This is the first time we've used WhatsApp in this way.
I appreciate you rolling with it. I actually can't hear it, but
you can't hear it?
That's fine if I can't hear it.
We have to we'll have to mute you.
Mute Josh and then
We have to you know, wade through our own technical jungle, if you will.
All right, let's disconnect. Josh, we're going to play the clip, but we're going to have to disconnect from you, and then we'll just reconnect, okay?
Okay, great. Yeah, call me back when you're ready.
Let's do that. So just disconnect from Joshua. Let's play the clip, and then we'll call him back.
To shut down the nuclear power plant.
All right, sounds good.
So Lisa is obviously active ally.
I know we're about to get like 50 Discord. Like, that Lisa's going to hurt the fight against climate change. Does Lisa it's totally unscientific.
Does Lisa know about thorium?
All right, so stipulate that you know, Springfield's not dealing with a climate crisis, but it's dealing with a negligent nuclear power plant. Exactly. Okay, Lisa wants to shut down the power plant. Yes, we have Lisa.
So we're mapping out her campaign.
Okay, great.
Where would Marge go?
Passive ally.
Oh, pause it for 1 second. Why? We should be clear. They are using the Simpsons as in this Springfield. They're using the Simpsons as a as the players within they're mapping this activist fight.
And let me just say, this is a great people should go back and watch this full segment, because it really captures what made Joshua and Michael good together.
If I recall from the show, Marge usually gets to the right place. She's pretty smart. She seems like she has some empathy, but she's obviously, you know, an overworked lower middle class. You know, I don't. Does she have a job too? I know she takes care of everybody in the house.
I think the complicating factor is her husband's job. So you know,
that's true.
So she might be.
Oh, because so we know.
Yeah. So Homer works at that power plant. So she might be passive opposition.
I think we're gonna need Matt on this. She's passive opposition.
But I'm or neutral. Passive opposition to neutral.
Yeah. Or she's gonna be super torn. Ooh, I don't even know how to answer that. Matt,
so,
I think Matt should be definitely being on this process.
Yeah,
I'm not Simpsons oriented enough.
Okay, so we're landing Marge somewhere between passive allies and neutral, because she's the mother of Lisa. She has moral values, but her husband works for the plant. So let's talk about him. Where does Matt? Where does Homer go?
I would say he's at possibly active opposition, but he's kind of a lazy guy. So maybe he's passive opposition, and he'll go with the flow if the power plant shuts down.
Why?
Why would he be passive?
Yeah.
Because I think that just the laziness. Maybe
he likes
care.
To drink. Doesn't he just like to drink beer and watch
TV? He'd be like one of these guys. Like he'd be a Trump voter who like whose factory gets shut down immediately after.
Okay.
So there's some debate about Homer. Yeah, he could be he could also be neutral, right? Because. Mm-hmm. So he has a material self-interest, right? He works for the power plant, and yes. If it gets shut down, he's out of a job. He's also the father of Lisa. He also doesn't like his job.
Yeah, hates his job.
He like hates it. Right?
Hates his job, and he does love his and respect his daughter. Isn't that one of the things of the show that he kind of gets, that even though she's like 8, she's much more intelligent than he is?
Yeah. So right. So what we notice from using this tool is that Homer has conflicting self-interest, right?
Right.
As most people do.
Well, as does Marge, of course.
As does Marge.
Right.
Homer's are a little more material because it's his job, but it's basically the same for her, right?
Right.
And so if you're organizing...
And I don't know, like, does she have her own job or is that the sole source of income?
I don't think so. I think he's the sole source of income.
Okay,
right?
That's a lot.
So if we were mapping this campaign out and wanted to organize Homer, what we would notice is he's got forces pulling him in one direction and the other direction, right? And so what we would want to do is enhance the things that pull him to the left and then figure out what does he need to neutralize the things that are pulling him to the right, which is a different job, right? And so immediately we would know, okay, we need like a green jobs campaign, right? And we need to organize with the workers of this power plant. If we just shut it down and let workers high and dry, where not only is that not part of our theoretical politics, but it also you can't win the campaign, right? And so, but maybe actually Homer's like an idiot and like a doofus, and we don't care about him in particular, but we do care about the other workers. So, Matt, where are Lenny and Carl at?
This is where we're pushing up on my limit of Simpsons knowledge. Yeah.
Can we find Lenny and Carver?
I can imagine Mr. Burns probably invested in the power plant. He'd be active opposition.
Wait. No, all right, I don't know much about them, but I'm assuming they're Homer's workmates, right?
Yeah, they also work there.
They're stable mates.
They also work there.
So are they, like, smarter? Do they have different character traits than him?
They're smarter. We care more about them, let's say. And so let's say we put them in neutral because we don't know.
Yeah, right? We don't know.
So
we don't know enough about them.
We
need to do a poll.
Right. So where would we do a poll? Do we know where they hang out?
They hang out at the bar, right?
Yeah, at most. Right.
All right. We got to send David Grisham to Moe's.
So we don't know where Moe's at either. But what this tool helps us do is realize, okay, there's a social institution.
Well, Moe's going to be worried because if all these guys lose their job, he'll have a job concern too.
If they will
lose their job, they're not going to go buy a beer to drink their misery away.
Exactly.
Yes.
So we're worried about getting Moe's approval, right? We don't know where he would land on here necessarily. We know that there might be a fear, but we do know that the only institution that they're connected to outside of the power plant is that.
You might have seen videos like this before.
Oh, jeez.
The big secret.
Bear with
Anyone
us, folks.
Can make one of these videos in a
vagaries,
few minutes.
Give that ad.
And so if we want to be able to organize with workers, we need to actually be able to have access to that space. So it doesn't matter where they're at yet, but it does matter where Mo is. And so what this chart would help us do in the campaign is identify, okay, Mo's a key person to connect with because that institution is necessary to build a base with the workers of this power plant so that we can enlist them in the campaign, right? And so we don't know where he might land, but so one of the uses of this tool is to discern, right, which audiences, which groups, which social blocks are important priorities for our campaign when we're – because a campaign is a timeline, right? And so the bar comes first, right? So you mentioned Burns. Burns is obviously active opposition, right? So it's obvious that we're not going to win the campaign by, like, changing Mr. Burns' heart.
Although if you talk to – and this is the – I shouldn't name it, but if you talk to some pundits who are maybe less politically sophisticated, they will tell you that the campaign starts with Lisa going to Mr. Burns and persuading him to do the right thing.
Uh-huh.
So that's actually still a belief that's out there.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about that belief is I actually think that that's a necessary step in a campaign.
Okay.
Because you actually have to go to the power holder,
right,
try to persuade them, have them say no. And then you have a basis to organize people, right? Because then you're like, they won't respond.
Yeah.
If you don't do that, people are like, why are you like getting all upset? Right. Why don't you just ask?
Oh, that's fascinating.
So you don't go because you think they're going to say yes. You go because you build a tool that you can use to educate your base, to build your muscle, to leverage your pressure.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So he's active opposition. Mo's is the key place we need to figure out where Mo's at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're going to get our raw political intelligence.
Who else might be active opposition?
Burns' assistant guy who's in love with him.
Smithers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Why?
Well, he's quite emotional. Actually, like, all kidding aside, if I recall correctly, he's quite emotionally attached to Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
So it's not only a job thing for him, because if it was a job thing, maybe he could be, you know, particularly him, because presumably he might have more job prospects as a more, like, you know, educated, credentialed kind of person. But he actually seems to have a real emotional connection with Mr. Burns.
Yeah,
so that might supersede everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Although.
But Mr. Burns doesn't treat him well.
No. And he's been – this is like maybe Simpsons trivia that's a little in the weeds. But he's disagreed with Burns privately before, right?
Mm.
And so he's not always down. And even if the plant's shut down, Burns is rich. He's still going to need an assistant. He's not out of a job.
True.
So Smithers, we don't know. But there's a chance that Smithers might be actually sympathetic but would never do it publicly. I've been on real campaigns before, and I could give an example if you want.
Please.
Where we have had an inside person in the company who has to have public allegiances to the company that we're campaigning against, but will feed us inside information. And that identifying those people is key. And so if we were mapping this out, we could identify Smithers as potentially that person. And maybe he won't go for it, but it's worth a shot.
Definitely.
You know? And that also goes back to what we were saying before of like, it's about finding the strategic roles for these folks based on their relationship to power, like, we don't need Smithers to go out and, like, declare that he's against the power plant, right? What we actually need is him to stay close to Burns and to give us the information we need. That's the key role he can play, right? And so when we use this kind of tool, we can get actually really specific and targeted with the kind of work we're doing, which is what we did with – it'd be kind of a larger story that if you want me to tell, I can tell after this. But we went after the Royal Bank of Canada for their funding of the tar sands, which is like the largest oil reserve in the on the planet.
Right.
And they're sort of steamrolling indigenous communities. And having an inside person was key to us getting the information we needed to have a smart strategy. Yeah.
All right. And we're going to bring Joshua back in. We're connecting with him now. As you can hear, this is technology we haven't totally worked out. This is Josh was the first guest we've had
via WhatsApp,
the jungle.
That too.
And here he is. He's back. We'll bring him in. And what does that say? Your camera is being used by another app. Oh, there we go. All right, great. Here's Joshua. Let's see if we can slide him into there. Maybe we can make our books boxes a little bit bigger too. There we go. Okay, great. Joshua, so we watched the clip where you created this sort of grid of where everybody stands in the context of an action and sort of like a power dynamics and various relationships using The Simpsons. Why don't you just talk about what? First off, it's fascinating, and I will put a link to that show, and people can go check it out. But why that? Why did you show that?
Well, I was thinking back of like when was the first moment that because we had found our flow together from the beginning, but it was always very organized, and that moment for me at least was our first moment of like freestyling. Where we, like, from that moment onward, so much of our work together was just so much more organic and so much more just like, yeah, in this emergent kind of flow. And so it was a thing that I always really appreciated Michael for pushing me on, because typically when I talk publicly, I'm very ultra overprepared. And he was like, stop preparing, just like hang out with me. And so this it felt like us just hanging out on air. And so it's a close clip to my heart for that reason.
It's also super fascinating and just, again, one of the things about, Michael's shows that you learn. I just think that there's so many lessons to be taken from that 10-minute clip in terms of not just in terms of like if you're running a campaign against a specific thing, but it's also understanding broadly, you can apply that grid that you've created there to just politics writ large, the way that people who are engaged, the way that they perceive lawmakers, the way that they perceive lobbyists, the way that they perceive voters, the way that they perceive their family and activists. I mean, it gives you a sense that like different people have different roles, and this is about achieving something. And so it's not about, the part about Smithers, I think, was really the one to me where you said in the clip, we don't need Smithers to be protesting the plant. We need Smithers to be on the inside and giving us information so that we can defeat the plant.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons he, it clicked with him so much was because Michael was always interested in assessing the terrain, always. He didn't take for granted that the political moment today is the same as it was yesterday, and that wanting to just see with clear eyes, okay, what's the battlefield right now, and to move through it with a real like orientation towards strategy. And the other thing about that clip that I loved was that he was so willing to go there, even though he was like, I only kind of know The Simpsons, but let's do it. Right. And so it was in that moment that I really began to appreciate his versatility. You know, like Michael was willing to go almost anywhere in a conversation with me and to do it with substance, or with levity, and usually both. And, you know, Michael was such a multifaceted person. And on air, I was constantly struck by his ability to inhabit different aspects of himself, depending on the guest, depending on what's going on in the moment. You know, we would move from conversations about strategy like that one to, you know, conversations about history, to the mechanics of building organizations or campaigns, to spirituality and how to know yourself, to mental health, to comedy, to culture, to music. I mean, his range was just tremendous. And the level of nuance with which he navigated it was just so instructive to me. You know, like, he was just always down. Like, pretty much any suggestion I had for any kind of new segment, he was like, yeah, let's go for it. Let's try it out, you know? And so it was really great to have a friend who was just so interested in, like, saying yes all the time and just, like, trying it out. And, like, because I think his North Star was just so clear through all of it.
It reminds me of when I went on TMBS and the Daenerys turn on Game of Thrones had just happened, where she'd become the villain of the story, and I was really, you know, nerdily pissed about it, and this does not make sense within the spirit of the books and all this stuff, and I think we shit on it for like 30 minutes, and Michael was just not that familiar with the show, and he was open about it. But I look back on it now, and like, he wanted to make fun of it. And his takes were just so much better than mine. Like, cause I was just so obsessed with the nerdy, like, minutia of it. And he pointed out all this white savior stuff involved in her character and stuff I was just not really willing to entertain, or that was not the central part of my focus at that point. But, at that point in my life or whatever. And so I think about that a lot as well.
Well,
that's awesome. I want to watch that clip.
It's pretty funny. Yeah.
Well, Joshua, can't thank you enough for all the effort that you made to come down and be with us today. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate your sharing that clip with us. And I hope that it will encourage people to go watch the episode. We'll put a link to it. And I hope when they're over there, they fall down, a wormhole and watch more. I mean, I think one of the things about Michael that I feel like we all got cheated of was in this moment following, Bernie's exit from the race, and he passed away only a couple of months after that, essentially. It is hard for, progressives, I think, socialists in some respects. I mean, folks who were sort of looking to Bernie to coalesce a movement. It's hard to sort of keep your eye on the sort of like things that Michael was able to keep his eye on, like the, mm-hmm. both an integrity of ideology, but also a sense of like, we got to do something. It can't just be like academic. It's not enough to say that these are my beliefs and I'm done. It is, what do we do in the real world that brings about the politics and the change in the world that we want? And that, I think, sort of like that is, we're in desperate need of that now. And it's unfortunate that we don't have him here to provide some of that for us.
Absolutely. I really appreciated his focus on like actually wanting to win rather than being self-satisfied with being correct and losing. And which is, I think he and I just resonated so deeply of our frustration with the left, of being of that culture, of feeling comfortable in its self-righteousness, of feeling like it's right and in its own self-marginality, and his desire to break through that marginality, to become mainstream, to have our politics become mainstream and be accessible for the sake of winning, was just so, so important, such an important part of his voice. And I think, you know, the last thing I'll share is that ultimately, I think what our project together that was emerging was how to keep, you know, the biggest possible picture in mind. You know, how to learn to be a good person, how to learn to love yourself, how to approach life so that you constantly learn from every challenge and grow on purpose with intention, and how to take care of other people so that you can find meaning in your life during a world historical moment of deep alienation and political and economic crises. So that you can find agency to have enough energy to participate politically and actually change the material conditions that we live in, and how that relationship between living in right relationship to yourself and that kind of fulfillment, and how important that is for political agency, was that's really the thread that we were leaning into when he died. And that's the piece of the work that I'm trying to keep going and let him continue to inspire me to move forward with. So thank you for having me on the show, and thanks for dealing with all the tech stuff for me calling in from here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Joshua Kahn Russell, thanks again so much. Really appreciate it. Talk to you soon. Okay, folks. Do we need to take a break?
Or just to give me about 30 seconds while we bring Waz on.
Okay. Next up, Waz came on to TMBS. And what was the name of the segment again? What was? Did they have a side? Do we have him on?
They're setting up the shot.
Here we go. We're bringing it in. Here we go.
Hey,
Waz, thanks so much for joining us. I'm here with Emma Bigland.
No problem. What's up, Em?
What's up? I wanted to say I've been praising you to Matt and Bradley recently, because I've really been getting into your NBA, you know, Ringer podcast, and I pretty much listen when you're on these days.
Wow. Thank you, man. Appreciate that so
yeah,
much.
No problem.
We got Leck here. So, Waz, I mean, just remind folks, like, how did you end up hooking up with Michael and coming on the show and the segments that you guys did?
Man, I was watching Majority Report, and you know, this would have been, God, man, this would have probably been like 2015, 16, maybe even, and you know, enjoying the show. Mike was sort of a sidekick sort of character, mostly on the show in those days, like comic relief and add his two cents here and there and whatever. And honestly, like, he used to do the Michael Mondays for Sam. And at first I used to ignore Michael Mondays, because I was like, I'm not very interested in watching the sidekick lackey, his version of Majority Report. Like, I'm good. I don't need the JV squad, right? And then one day I did watch it for whatever reason. And obviously, as you guys know, Mike was incredible. I was like, oh my God, this guy's hilarious. This guy is really smart. He's insightful. He is like really on it in a way that I'd never really seen before in political media space, right? Of any kind, like go from CNN to MSNBC to whatever the fuck it is Bill Maher's doing these days. Like, you know, like, you go from all over, run the gamut of political media. I've never seen anybody doing it like him. And, you know, it was the Nation of Islam Obama. It was either Nation of Islam or 5%er, which is an offshoot of Nation of Islam. And I was like, that is the funniest thing I've ever seen. Because, you know, at the time, I was still friends with a lot of right-wingers from high school. And, like, so I was privy to their thoughts on Facebook about Obama, which is that he was this like black militant psychopath person, right? And it obviously so far from the truth of who the guy actually is. And Mike putting that angst in a skit, a character, like, was just so genius to me. And that he would use the 5%er nation, which again, people need to understand, is an offshoot of the Nation of Islam. Like, nobody really knows what the Nation of Islam is about, and they absolutely don't know what the 5%er nation is about. But that Mike could thread that needle and understand why this was the perfect vehicle to make that joke, I just thought was genius. And so I reached out to him on Twitter. I was just like, bro, like, that is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. And he was like, thank you and all of that. And he was like, you know, we struck up a friendship, and he basically said, let's get together sometime. We met at a bar in Brooklyn, and then we just were friends from that point on until his like tragic passing. You know, obviously we became closer and closer through the years. But yeah, it was that, like, we met, then he would have me up whenever, you know, Sam was off, and he basically had the run of the place up there, and he would sneak me onto the show, and that was it. And then, you know, all of his other endeavors, you know, whether it be what he was doing with Phil, with Two Dope Boys, and of course the Michael Brooks show, like, you know, he always tried to make me a part of what he was doing, which I was obviously super happy to do. So yeah, that's the story of how I met Mike. It was just, I discovered him on this show. Which, Sam, I told you this before, like, I found your show from you being on Chris Hayes' weekend show.
Right.
Up with Chris Hayes. And back in those days, Emma, if you could believe it, Sam was like the like psycho lefty crazoid.
So they stuck him on the weekend. So they stuck him on the weekend.
Yeah, and I was like, who is this guy? This is great. and it was like, yeah, Majority Report. And I, you know, started watching the show from there, and that's how I got into it.
Yeah, those were the now it's just all Republicans, essentially, on all the guests. But also, I ate a lot of Danish on that show. That was also my claim to fame on that. Well, all right, so tell us about the clip that you chose. I mean, I think there could have been a ton, but this one, what was it about this one that you liked so much?
Well, first, it was like the snarky-ass student at the beginning.
This is my alma mater. Like, I don't mean to be like,
really?
This is where I went to college.
Wait, where was this?
Lafayette. I went to college here, and I have sat in this classroom where he's speaking like many, many times.
Where is this school at?
It's in Easton, Pennsylvania, and it's the way the student asks him this question makes total sense. Like, it tracks. It tracks with my former, you know, college classmates.
Easton, Pennsylvania, hometown of legendary heavyweight boxing champ Larry Holmes. So shouts to Easton. So I remember this clip went super viral after Mike had passed, and I couldn't stop watching it because it was just so perfect in explaining Mike. I think especially after 2016, it was like really easy to become very angry with individual right-wingers or people who just didn't share our politics, right? Like, I remember being really into Ta-Nehisi Coates at the time, just because, like, his work was basically, like, white people are trash. and it was, like, this visceral experience. Like, you know, I've kind of evolved, obviously, from that line of thinking. But, like, I just remember feeling like, wow, finally somebody's saying this stuff out loud, and it just feels great to hear it, right? But, you know, the more I would, like, talk to Mike about it, and because Mike, as you guys know, was not a big Colts fan, he was just like, yeah, fair, but there's no politics in that, right? Like, that's not a politics. And so I'm not as impressed by it. Obviously, the people who support this right-wing agenda are problematic, but there's no politics in that. And also, you know, this idea that we would antagonize people that we need to make at least common cause with some of them. Obviously not all of them, but we got to figure out how to get some of them to mess with what we're doing. You know, that's not really the tact we need to take. And so in this clip where this young Jewish woman is just like, Mike, you're Jewish. Why the you're Jewish? You claim to be Jewish, don't you? Why the hell aren't you on the program? What the hell is your problem? Right? And I think, you know, it would have been very easy to like sort of attack this individual person and their individual thoughts. And I think Mike was genius mostly at focusing his anger and his vitriol at the people who can actually do stuff about stuff. You know, like the people in control, like, yeah, like the hayseeds in West Virginia are probably way more racist than Mitch McConnell is individually. But like Mitch McConnell is doing infinitely more damage to everybody's lives. And Mike was really good at articulating that to people and not letting individual beliefs shade his interactions with them. And I think that's something that I personally learned and took from Mike. And so in this clip, he's doing the Mike thing perfectly, right? Like, this girl is attacking him. Like, she is attacking this dude, and he just parried it so expertly, like freaking Muhammad Ali. You know what I mean? He just bobbed and weaved and was so eloquent and gracious, you know, like, and I think that's something that a lot of us are missing on the left is grace. You know, like this guy was so gracious. It just really spoke to me. And I think it's something, and I think it's a perfect encapsulation of the type of stuff that Mike was on and what Mike was about. And that's why when you asked me, Sam, for if I wanted to redo a clip, this one immediately came to mind.
All right, let's play this clip.
Hi.
Hi.
So my first question, it says on your Twitter that you're Jewish. Am I getting this right?
No.
Is it the right Twitter?
On my Twitter bio, it says I'm Jewish?
No, but like in your tweets. I don't want to be wrong.
I have Jewish background. I'm just trying to think of...
Okay, so as someone with a Jewish background...
Yes.
How do you feel about Bernie's plan for Israel, especially as someone concerned with foreign policy?
I love it. It's an absolutely necessary. My Jewish values teach me to oppose apartheid.
Okay. Could you elaborate, please?
I mean, there really isn't that much to elaborate on. I mean, has anybody ever been not only to Israel, but also to the... Have you been to the West Bank? Have you been to Gaza?
Yeah.
You went to Gaza?
I went to the border.
Oh, okay. But not to Gaza?
You can't be in Gaza.
Well, I know people have gone to Gaza. You could definitely go to Gaza. So for me, my politics are built on a base of, you know, economic justice and actually really like anti-racism, as in some ways as distinct from some of this sort of woke stuff in a way. But when I grew up, you know, I was pretty connected to left politics, so I always knew growing up about the travesty that was the human rights situation there. And I knew that people I admired, like Nelson Mandela, said, you know, South Africa is going to not be properly free until the Palestinians are free. In 2006, I believe, I read a piece by a guy named Tony Jutt in the New York Review of Books, who was a really important Jewish scholar. And he just said, like, the argument was that, like, literally this is childish. Like, the idea that you have an ethno-state or a religious state, if you're committed to any type of broad-based social, economic equity and civil society, it doesn't work. No matter how justified, right? Of course there's justification because of Jewish history for Israel. There's justification for Kurdistan because of Kurdish reality. There's justification for Pakistan. It's notable that Israel and Pakistan are both disasters.
Israel not in the sense of, you know, look, if you're a European Jewish background, you have a nice life there. If you're not, you are, even inside 67 borders, not a fully equal citizen. And the situation in the West Bank is, I mean, it is literally Jim Crow-like. And Gaza is, I mean, it's just an atrocity. So that's not something that anybody could reasonably ask me to support. And I understand, you know, yeah, there's some actions from some Palestinian groups that, you know, we can condemn. In fact, those have not even really been in any way seriously in play since like 2003. And when we talk about, you know, look, and the apartheid word specifically is both used by people who were crucial in ending apartheid in South Africa, like Desmond Tutu or Ronnie Kasrols, who served as intelligence minister under Mbeki, who I've interviewed. And the other main people who use the apartheid word are Ehud Olmert and Ehud Barak. So it is what it is. And I don't support second-class citizenship and occupation and sieges for anybody, no matter who they are.
Are you not concerned about the binary between either condemning Israel entirely, being like also a stance that a lot of like very strong and notorious anti-Semitic people agree with, versus like, you know, seeing this as more of a complex issue where it is wrong what's going on, and that there's also a way to do this that Israel still exists and is supported?
So it's not a complex issue. That's the big thing. It's super simple. There's one group that has enormous power. It's the most powerful country in the Middle East. It's backed by the United States. It acts on another population of people with total impunity and is never held accountable for anything. So there's no symmetry in the relationship, period. And just as like a thought experiment, IDW people, if we know that if somehow a population of Jewish refugees ended up in West Bank and Gaza, and an Arabic government in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv had an open-air prison in what, you know, Jewish Gaza, which they bombed with white phosphorus, they killed civilians indiscriminately, and they had no provisions for medicine, they had an embargo that blocked food, that electricity wasn't running, that there was an over 48% unemployment rate, life expectancy and malnutrition statistics were horrifying. One of the major policymakers in this hypothetical Arabic Palestinian state said, we need to put those Jews on a diet. In the West Bank, there was another Jewish area where there was a little bit more autonomy, but there was regular Arabic settlements where they pulled up the Jewish farmers' foods, they terrorized them with rocks, the security forces broke children's bones, and they couldn't drive their own roads. We'd all have no problem understanding what that was. So there's nothing complex about it. The second part of your question, it's a pure asymmetry relationship. And the question is rights or not. So that's it. It's not complicated. The second part of your question, at this point, there's always going to be crackpots who are anti-Semitic who condemn Israel. That's not what drives the movement, particularly in the United States. If you work around most people who are concerned with this issue, it's actually populated with a lot of Jewish people. The real question we have to ask is, why is it that AIPAC is hosting a information minister for Slobodan Milosevic? Why is it that there's relationships between the Israeli government and far-right parties in Europe? Why is it that Benjamin Netanyahu's son is posting borderline alt-right memes? Why is it that Israel is an alt-right state, even though it is from the descendants of the victims of one of the greatest crimes in history? That's a serious question, and that's inseparable from the racism of the project, which goes back to the first part that we have to solve. But thank you. Shalom.
Yeah,
that's a great clip.
I mean, like, that went viral because this was in the midst of, I mean, that went last year, right? The latest brutality in Palestine. And I think it went viral because, like, Gigi Hadid Bella Hadid shared it. They're of Palestinian descent, but like one of the top three models in the world. And that, it was just surreal to see that happen.
That, by the way, that would have made.
Oh yeah, that was it up there with Lula.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great clip. I mean, sadly, it's probably going to be evergreen for many years to come. But it is it's a great clip that can speak, and I think this is part of your point, was, is that it can speak across the board, regardless of where one is situated. It wouldn't speak to, frankly, the Christian Zionists, and I think, like, you know, Michael was clearly on to something. We know Netanyahu now has been, I think, they're reporting, and I don't know if he said it himself, but certainly they've been reporting that Netanyahu really does see support in the United States amongst Republicans and particularly Christian Zionists. But there's a whole sea of people between the Christian Zionists, the Christian right in this country, whose support of Israel has to do with, you know, the return of Jesus and sending some of us into eternal hellfire.
He's going to return, Sam. You didn't know that?
Well, I'm concerned.
He's coming back for the sequel.
I know. I understand. I understand. And 2/3 of us go into eternal hellfire, and I can't do that because of my eczema. But there's a whole sea of people from those people who, you know, I could send that to my aunt. With all due respect to my aunt, who is, you know, probably not unlike of the disposition of that kid who asked the question. But then there's a whole sea of people that clip can work with. And that was, you know, one of the things that Michael was really adept at is being able to address, like you say, address that person without them feeling like they're being attacked and just sort of like, you've got no toehold in my approach to you. You're just going to have to deal with the sort of the reality that I'm presenting.
Yeah, and it's all based in this concept of... Is my mic muted?
No, we can hear you.
Okay, it's all based in this concept of coalition building, right? I think a lot of people on the left, especially in this moment, like, they just have a hard time understanding that, like, let's just say issues that affect African-American people, right? We make up, I think at last check, 11% of the population, 11 to 12%, which basically means by yourself, black people can't do anything, period. That's just not how our system is set up. So based on that reality, there needs to be coalitions built. And you have to find common cause with people. And how you do that is not this, like, us versus them. You know, you walk around pissed off all day because, again, like, some hick in Arkansas probably doesn't like black people. Like, you can't spend your time thinking and worrying about that. You need to really concentrate on the people on the edges of whatever that ideology is and bringing them into our fold. You know, and I do believe in, maybe I'm pie in the sky and I'm an idiot, but I do believe there are plenty of people who can be reached when we get through the morass, right? Like, you know, the issues of the atrocities in Gaza and the West Bank aside, I think at the heart of what Mike was trying to say, was proving in that clip, excuse me, is that there's a way to talk to people about these things that we feel very strongly about, and try to be persuasive, persuade, right? Like, a lot of times you hear on the left, like, oh, it's not my job to teach people. Oh, it's not my job to be holding people's hand. They need to get here already. It's not my job to be talking to bigots. I'm like, well, actually, in coalition-based politics, it is your job to do that, you know? And I think Mike understood that quite acutely. Like, yeah, it is our job to persuade people. It is our job to get people to want to be a part of our project. And, you know, in that clip, like, this guy was just a freaking expert at how you deal with this stuff, man. You know, like, how you be a human being to people, to bring it to the basis level and level with folks. Like, even if you think it's beneath you to deal with a misogynist or a transphobe or a racist or a bigot or somebody who you might deem to be unworthy of your piety, you know? In this country, you got to build coalitions. You know, maybe in other places where there's like an ethnic minority rule And it don't matter what the vast masses of people want to do or how they feel. All right, cool. You can behave in different ways. But over here, you got to figure out how to get a mass of people to find common cause with you so that we can move forward in the stuff that we want to see make this place, you know, even marginally better.
Well, Wozni Lombre, thank you so much for coming on today and highlighting that clip. And it's, you know, we'll put a link, obviously, to that clip so that people can pass that around again. And it was great to see you. I really appreciate you taking the time, man. Of course.
Peace to you guys, man. Peace to my brother, Matt Leck. Sam, appreciate you. Emma. I'm sure she's
just indisposed in the moment.
Yeah, she's indisposed.
We'll tell you to say goodbye.
Peace to Emma. Much love to you guys. Love what you guys are doing. Fighting the good fight every day. I love when I get up on my YouTube and I see a majority clip where you guys are frying some right winger or bringing attention to a cause that is worthy, right? So I appreciate the work that you guys are doing. And yeah, man, keep it up. Love you guys.
All right. Thanks, Waz. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Waz.
Love.
All right.
Peace.
Bye-bye. All right. Let's. Emma's going to come back, and Waz said goodbye.
Oh, bye, Waz.
Much love. And,
sorry.
Coming on to the program now. You don't need to take
10 seconds.
10 seconds. Within 10 seconds, the publisher. Of the Jacobin and the Catalyst, well, he'll correct me if I get the exact title wrong, and also now working doing a little work for the Nation magazine as well. Bhaskar Sankara is here. Bhaskar, welcome to the program. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's nice to see you too, Sam. I'm technically just the editorial director at Jacobin now. Rumi J. Forbes is our publisher, but at The Nation, I hold a cool title. I'm the president of The Nation, which...
Whoa! This is excellent news!
We have the president of the United States on our program with
us. My president.
Yes.
Exactly. Here, obviously, with Emma Vigeland as well, Bhaskar.
Hey, Bhaskar.
Wow, that's great news. President of The Nation.
Well, since we're talking about Michael, every time I heard the word The Nation, I just think of, you know, Barack Obama, Nation of Islam, Barack Obama.
Yes.
the real nation.
We just had Waz on talking about that. That was sort of the thing that brought them together. It was Waz just reached out to Michael after watching that on the show. And one of the things I think people on this show don't realize that early on, back when we were in the old dumpy, really dumpy place, for about 3 months over the course of a summer, I can't remember which, I would do the majority report and then go do a 3-hour radio show. And it got to the, like, it was exhausting. And so, like, on Fridays, I was like, Michael, just come over and be Barack Obama and just give me shit on air. And that's it. And that's basically what we would kill a half an hour of that show. And we would never plan it. He would just come over, and I'd be like, I'd like to welcome the president. And then we would just go for a half hour. It was always fun. And I didn't have to do anything. That was the best part about it. he just went off.
One of the few times that I've seen you really uncomfortable on air was one of his early Nation of Islam skits. I didn't know whether you were putting that on or whether you were really worried that maybe this is going a bit too far.
Cancel culture, man.
Or a fatwa, even worse than a cancel culture.
The ultimate cancel culture.
There's been one time where I was genuinely like, oh, God, dude. And it was not that, actually. And I saw the clip and I've been debating. It was when he was – I just rewatched it. I don't even know if I want to say what it was, but it was – he was accusing – what do you think it was?
No, you have,
I don't know.
You have to say it, though.
Well, he – There somehow came a joke. I mean, that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about doing the show with Michael, is that we would just riff on air and things would develop. And one of them at one point was I don't know what that is. One of them at one point.
That's Bhaskar's audio, I think.
One of them at one point was that I was an assassin working for Hillary Clinton,
oh, right,
and had assassinated Seth Rich was one of the like sort of conspiracies that were going out there. And he would do his mockery of me voice as if I was the assassin, and then talk about how I, that I would be sexually turned on every time I killed someone. And
oh, right.
It was, I just remember just like, you could see in the clip, I'm just going, ah, like, it's funny. It's so funny. But yeah. Like, I don't think this is appropriate. But there was a lot of stuff that we fooled around, joked around with that was not appropriate, and we didn't do it on air. But that was as close as we got. But and I know you had experiences with that, with Michael in that way, too.
Yeah. I mean, I always felt like he was under control, you know? I think he had a good sense of, I think, where the boundaries were, because he was just a good enough person that he had a sense of. And because I'm sure, as people have said throughout this, that he just never punched down. You know, he never kind of he directed his jokes the right way. But I was just thinking about, you know, something you said to me right after, two years ago, you know, right after we had heard about Michael's death. And I don't quite recall it off the top of my head, but it was essentially that Michael was someone who was not just funny, because lots of people are funny, but he was able to craft a funny impression or make up a character that was not only just, I think you put it, like a vehicle for political satire, but there was satire in its essence. And I'm wondering if you could kind of explain that for listeners, because I think it really did capture something about why Michael was funnier than most people who try to do political comedy.
Yeah, he had the ability, like I've known people. I had a buddy who I did comedy with years and years ago who just would absorb things and put them together in a way where there was satire inherent in the construction of everything they did. And Michael was a good impressionist, like he could do, but in terms of like political comedy, and I can't remember how I phrased it at the time, but I know you're talking about it. He had the ability to satirize even the premise itself was satirical, and everything that emanated from that premise was satirical. And he could make a political comment that was consistent with his ideology and do it in and have the character express that satire. He wasn't like outside the joke. He inhabited the joke and was able to consistently provide an ideological satirical perspective, but inhabit it as well. And that is just really hard to do. Like, you'll see people who will make, you know, I don't know. There was a great joke that Marc Maron had in the run up to Obama's election, which is like, finally, black people are going to have, for the first time in this country, the opportunity to get screwed over by one of their own. And which is a great satirical joke, but it's, you know, multiple people could deliver that joke, and you could deliver it in different ways, and it wasn't it was just a joke. Michael would inhabit these characters and express, he would show, not tell, in many respects. And that is just it's a rare thing to find in the context of comedy, but in terms of political comedy, like I I've worked with some, you know, Barry Crimmins and a lot of like political comedians coming out of Boston. And I mean, I've worked with a lot of really talented comedians and satirists. And he could do that in a way that I don't know really any other folks could do. And he was very good at it, and could also, it was just genuinely funny. Like, I have comedian friends who would, I would be like, you know, after a while, like, he's actually really funny, which is one of the highest compliments you can possibly get from a professional comedian. And particularly in that day and age, too.
Yeah, I mean, the thing like that really, when I first became friends with Michael, like way back, like 2013, 2014, it was his humor and day-to-day conversation that kind of won me over to him. Because other than that, it was just a professional relationship. And he would occasionally ask me to come on the Majority Report. At first, I'd be like, God damn, am I on only with Michael? Am I only on the B team, like whatever days, Tuesdays or whatever days Michael would host? I was like, you know, I want some love.
I had you on for your book. I had you on before that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But then I'm like, all right, I met Michael a few times and I'm just like feeling him out. And then I just assume he's going to ask me about, you know, what's happening in the news or something. And then he just like comes in hot and asks me about, you know, the decline of the South African Communist Party or, you know, what's going on in Sweden. And, you know, he was a uniquely well-informed person, but it was more just like he wanted the cliff notes for every single possible thing that was going on in the world. And there was this kind of intellectual curiosity that I think always separated him throughout his, you know, political evolution. I'm not sure how he would have defined himself back then, but obviously I think towards the end of his life, he definitely defined himself as a democratic socialist. But with that normally came with either kind of a smug kind of condescension that I think a lot of either young democratic socialists or new converts to the cause sometimes have, or maybe a piety kind of, but I think he got away with bringing an audience with him along with his subtle changes in views just on the basis of his charisma and humor and just the sense that this was exciting and this was the way to win, you know, to think seriously about economic issues and like Waz was saying earlier about building a coalition, a majoritarian coalition that could actually change things. You know, this is what you do if you're serious about politics. So even the kind of random interest that he would have, like in South African history and the fall of apartheid, with Lula, you know, these things to me at first seemed like really disconnected. But in that context, it kind of made sense. He was looking for lessons on how we win in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. It's also impossible to, I mean, he was incredibly knowledgeable about, South Africa, you know, for, you know, within the context of like what we do as like a YouTube show, I don't think there was anybody who was like a generalist, you know, I mean, obviously if I'm a professor of Latin American politics, I'm going and I do a show. I'm going to do, you know, a weekly show and I'm going to talk about something. But in terms of like a generalist, it's very hard to find somebody who did have so much knowledge in so many different areas, particularly in terms of like foreign policy. And then also the ability to do Nelson Mandela impersonation as a right winger that he would then. And one of the clips I think I pulled, I don't know if we're going to end up having playing it, but he's doing Nelson Mandela, then filtering it through a Sopranos guy when he got into the Sopranos. And then that guy is doing an impression of Donald Trump. So, and I just remember he's going off and I'm like, if there's anybody who's never seen this show before, or even just have been watching it for like, but they're going to have absolutely no idea what's going on.
And that second
like
layer.
Nelson Mandela is doing like two other impressions.
I think at some point we should skip my clip and just play that one because I think I know what you're talking about. But I feel like if that's ready at some point while I'm on, I think we should immediately start playing that. Right Wing Mandela was always my favorite. I always preferred that, I think, to Nation of Islam Obama. But, you know.
I think Right Wing Mandela might be is his number one. And we should if we're to rank.
The Right Wing Mandela was also one of those characters that we just like it just happened in the moment. We're watching what's his face?
Santorum.
Rick Santorum went on after I think Mandela died and was talking about I think the multiple votes they had taken against the Affordable Care Act. And he was saying, you know, we're fighting like Mandela fought. And then we were just like, that's, you know, and I think I may have said something like, yeah, that's right. Like Nelson Mandela, you know, fighting apartheid and voting against the Affordable Care Act. Very similar. And then he just started doing Mandela. And I had no idea he could do Mandela. You know, like I never knew he could do any impression. they just kept showing up. And it went from there. But this was one of those moments, I think this is it right here.
Look, his own daughter hates him. It's really very pathetic. I mean, look, it's true. It's disgusting. His own daughter doesn't. Look, Ivanka would date Donald if she could. This guy does. I mean, his daughter doesn't even want to kiss on the cheek. It's really pathetic. I mean, you can't make a deal with a guy like that. No one likes him. The senators don't like him. I bet his daughter hates him. Clearly, his wife thinks of other people while she's having sex with him. I mean, he's a mess.
Can you imagine if we were actually like, clip this and put it out? Just like, just that Mandela. And people would be like, it sounds like a Mandela impersonation. But also, like he's Donald Trump. What the frick is this?
Yeah.
He got so down the wormhole. I mean, that was just a moment there where that DJ Dan Arkey found that, where I was like, yeah, that was, that type of thing was the what I had been striving for the show, was just like, you tune in, you can't, it's not accessible to you. You're going to have to watch the show for another couple of months if you want to get that. If you don't, goodbye. There's plenty of other places for you to go. And that's what he brought to the show, I think.
The Bill Clinton accent might have been the most technically correct. Like, I'm not sure if it was his funniest, but it's kind of incredible that this was just a figure who was in the public limelight for a decade plus, and not many people were able to master, you know, the real Bubba.
He would do Bernie or Bust Bill Clinton.
Because he hated Hillary.
Bernie or Bust Bill Clinton hated Hillary. And do we have anything like that? We don't have a clip of that, do we? I'm sure we can find it, but let's play your clip, and then if we have one or two others, we'll pop it up. Or do you want to just do you need to set it up, or should we just?
I don't think I need to set it up. I mean, essentially, this goes to what I was saying before, which is that Michael was someone who late in his life, especially, moved over to perspectives that were quite anti-identitarian, right? Quite critical of a lot of the existing left. He just did it in a way that didn't piss off people. And I think it was his combination of, one, just being a great communicator and easing people into why these things matter. I think in this clip, he talks throughout in this clip about the importance of embedding the left in economic demands, embedding it in labor. He also mentions the fact that, like, yeah, jobs and family is kind of how people conceive of a lot of their daily life. So it's a pretty important part of building majoritarian politics. So there's this slight dig at kind of the abolished family idea on the left. But you just pissed no one off, you know? I was moderating the live stream when he was doing this, and I was just getting ready to hit the ban button. I think we're a little stricter. You guys are a little more, small D democratic than we were on Jack of the Channel. But no one was pissed off. So anyway, that's the setup.
About abolishing the family or things like that. Some of the only places in life where people might potentially feel some refuge in today's world is totally counterproductive and foolish sort of rhetoric to lead with. We have to say that the breakdown of community life, people not having free time, people not being able to build the lives they want, however they conceive it, is a big problem that we have answers to as well. But we understand that the base of why those problems are developing is because of massive inequality, increased work hours, a freelance economy, and basically capitalism.
There you go. I mean, that is a good example of him being able to sort of address those things and do it in a way that is just makes so much sense that I think it's hard for people to sort of like, you know, like I say, get a toehold in where they can take offense to what he's saying.
Yeah, and I think he was building towards trying to develop some type of left populist rhetoric. And I think he had the sense that, you know, the Marxism was kind of something to be kept in your bones, but in your mouth, the rhetoric that could actually build a majority support in America and actually galvanize people with some sort of left populist rhetoric. So I know he, you know, collaborated a lot with people like Crystal Ball and others who I think really were searching in that direction too. But I think the definition that he laid out in another clip that I didn't provide, and I don't think we should try to dig up, but it was, I think might've been a TMBS clip. It was kind of like sympathy is not the same thing as solidarity. I think captured a lot of somewhat, I wouldn't say his evolution, because I think he always knew that, but kind of where our politics need to go, because sympathy is hand in hand with a lot of discourses about privilege. And a lot of those things are different than the sense of comradeship, belonging, and shared struggle that comes with solidarity. Because in solidarity, we all have an active role to play. We're not either victims or allies. We're people with a part to play in the fight. And I think that was a really nice summation of our politics broadly. No matter where you line up, whether you identify as a liberal, a progressive, a socialist, I think there's a common egalitarian spirit that unites us when we call for something like Medicare for All or taxing the rich or making an economy that works for ordinary people. And Michael managed to bridge all these worlds all at once and make people feel something that wasn't just a didactic kind of program, a list of demands. He made them feel like they were part of something. And I think that's what a great communicator does. That's what we need politicians on the left to do. And I think that's why his legacy is just, you know, he obviously resonated with so many more people than even I, you know, I knew. And, you know, I think this was his goal. And it'll, you know, obviously it's a morbid way to put it. And I haven't thought about how to phrase this, but I think that some of the things that happened in the first couple of years after his death would have been, in a sense, validating to him, because I feel like this is what he was trying to build. Obviously not around him as a, you know, just as a person, as an individual, but I think he was trying to build this type of politicized community that was kind of both value-based but not limited to just values and morals, but actually connected to real politics.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's too bad that, I mean, he doesn't have the ability to or at least to the extent that we can know, to have the ability to understand that the impact that he had made. And I think, you know, this also came up over at one point over the past couple of years. I really feel like he was just hitting his stride and was at the age where, you know, this is, you know, this where his influence and, you know, the value he was going to bring to this space as it is was just on the verge of that. And it's a real shame not to be able to, well, I think there's a material loss for people in terms of like, or at the very least, you know, a loss in the sense of like, it's very helpful to have, you know, people who are articulating at least one path that people can follow. And but also just, you know, to not have that 15, 20 years of the next 15, 20 years of his career that were going to take place. I mean, it's almost impossible to get a sense of where that trajectory leads. It's a real shame, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing I'll say is that he was just, I think, as all of us know, he was just a beautiful person to be around. I might've mentioned this before, the very last time I ever met him in the flesh, it was, you know, I'd spent most of the pandemic in Boston, but in like June I was in town. And there was a straight shot walking home to get to my apartment by walking down Green Street in Brooklyn. But instead, I decided to make like a random turn and just walk down Gates in case I ran into Michael, because I, you know, passed his apartment. I didn't text him or anything. And I just happened to see him like either walking in or walking out of his apartment on a stoop. We got together, we chatted. It was still like pandemic times. So, I mean, obviously we're still in a pandemic now, but really pandemic times then. So we just chatted on the stoop, but then we agreed to hop on a Zoom with some friends. And it was just a tour de force of, you know, him, just like taking over the Zoom, but in a good way, just clearly the most dynamic personality on, around. And it was just like a very nice, nice thing. And I think about how many people, as a kind of a grown man with my own problems in my own world, that I would have just like taken an extra 5-minute detour for the 2% chance of running into him. But I'm, very glad I did. And I think he meant, something really special to a lot of us. He wasn't, just an ordinary friend, just an ordinary colleague. He was clearly just very dynamic. I know he really valued his friendships. I knew about people like Waz and Nando and, a host of people, Ben Burgess. Like I knew about people that he cared about even before I met them, because he would just talk about his friends and the great things they're doing. He would talk about his sister. He would just, I think, really showed appreciation for the people around him. I'm glad for the experience of knowing him. I'm glad for the experience of working with him. And I'm glad that he left behind so much. I used to think that the type of work that he did with video, with podcasts, similar to like writing essays, that it would be kind of transient, right? So most of what I do is editing and writing essays, right? I just figure, okay, that work will go away really quickly. Unlike, being a novelist or something, writing something longer. But obviously Michael was the exception. It was just so good, Michael Burks' thought will be around, subject to many different interpretations, I'm sure, but influencing people for the better for many, many years to come. And I'm sure his memory, for those of us who knew him personally, will be a blessing for years and years to come.
Bhaskar, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Can we just bring Ben right on? Okay, we'll give it the 10 seconds. Okay, our last guest for the day. Oh, and Griscom, right. I was right, sorry.
Second to last guest
is here with us now. He was just name-checked just seconds ago. Perfect segue. Ben Burgess. Bhaskar just name-checked you. Saying that Michael was talking about you guys are good friends. And how did you guys hook up?
Yeah, so a few years back, our mutual friend Doug Lane had actually booked, who was at that time the editor of Zero Books, and he was running the Zero Books podcast. And this is like 2017 or 18. He'd actually booked Jordan Peterson to come on the podcast, and then at some point before it was supposed to happen, Peterson, or likely somebody who worked for him, Googled Doug and realized it wouldn't be a friendly interview and backed out. And then very shortly after that, Peterson was on Rogan, and Joe Rogan, in his amiable sort of way, said, "Hey, how come you never debated it is like a quality of outcome Marxist you're always talking about?" And he said, "Well, they don't want to talk to me." And Doug got so pissed off about that he hooked up with this group in Idaho at this university in Boise. And they organized this conference called Jordan Peterson, a conference in lieu of a debate. And and Michael and I were both at that, and we both had contracts for books with Zero that I'd already written a draft of mine. Michael was still in the early stages. His was Against the Web, obviously. And I guess this is not technically quite when I – because I did meet him early before Doug showed up, because a bunch of people went out to lunch at like a Chipotle or something. And I remember actually somehow while we were standing in line, people were talking about Donald Trump, and Michael and I started joking about it. We sort of admitted to each other that while we both thought Trump was a monster, we did both appreciate him as an insult comic.
I'll never understand when liberals don't understand that Trump's funny. Like, I feel like I've had this debate with so many people, and yes, he's funny. He's funny.
He's a road comic, I think.
Okay, intentionally funny in many ways, but he makes us laugh.
Intentionally funny. I mean, when he was like ripping his way through the rest of the Republican field in 2016, and he'd do things like the, you know, it's Rubio, you know, with the bottle of water. Yeah. Like, that's funny.
You see it with him going after Musk now. He's still got it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Musk absolutely cannot hack it in that, like, conflict. Like, that is like bringing a water pistol, you know, to a gunfight. Like, it's bad. But then, like, later in the day, Doug showed up, and he was going to have meetings with both of us, and he just kind of combined them and went out to a bar, and we ended up talking, and I got the, hey, brother, you know, should have you on the show sometime by the end of it. But then I think on the way back, they had everybody was, like, kind of buzzed and walking back to the conference, and Michael said something that gave me an opening to tell a really juvenile joke at his expense that I'm not going to repeat on air. And I just remember his reaction to that was like, you know, I mean, everybody who's seen him even on the show knows what I'm talking about, but like, he just kind of like tipped back his head and laughed as if it was the funniest thing he'd ever heard in his life. Right. You know, it'd be very easy for a lesser man to be insulted by it, 'cause I was just, you know, screwing with him. And then throughout the rest of that weekend, there were people who were upset at Doug because of a video that he'd done for Zero Books that was like that had to do with it was like kind of a Marxist critique of the limits of intersectional theory, and Michael thought the criticism was unfair, but he responded in a very typically Michaelish way, which is that he started developing this bit that he would like give me like every time I saw him over the weekend. You know, like dozens of times over the next few days, every time, like, you know, we'd been doing different events or whatever, and like we'd come back together, he would like give me the bit again, and he'd added new things to it. And what it was a version of Doug's video that would have been bad enough to justify the backlash. And then at the end of the weekend, when like he went back like a day earlier than I did, you know, so it was like Monday and I was at the airport in Boise. He was back in Brooklyn, and he'd actually recorded himself. He sent to me this MP3 of himself doing the bit, which he'd put so much effort into. He'd actually, he recorded some music to go in the background that was like a parody of the kind of music that Doug would do in the background of his videos. And it's kind of an insane amount of effort to put into like a recording that, like, I mean, I assume he also shared it with Doug and maybe one or two other people, but I mean, like, you know, there's like five people maximum who ever heard this, and it's a ridiculous amount of effort to put into it, you know. But
did he make Matt, did you have to produce it?
No, I don't think I did that one. Well, actually, that is, but I don't know how he got the music on there without,
like, wait a second, how that happened. The question is, who out there was roped into doing the actual production?
Yeah. That's true. There's probably a very limited list of people you could like go through and see.
No, it could have been anybody. He could have run into somebody in the airport with like GarageBand, and he could have been like, "Hey, wait a second."
Might have been Forrest at that point, our TMBS guy.
Oh yeah, that's possible. That's possible.
That's funny.
I will say too. So in between this and when I actually started doing the weekly segment on TMBS. Like in the months in between, you know, I was living in New Jersey at that point, so I would take the train in and meet up with him for drinks or usually just dinner, you know, in Brooklyn, you know, like once every few weeks or so. And this was very funny to me later, that because like he was always late consistently, like every single time. You know, we met up, like, I don't think there was a time that he was on time, you know, usually one very late, but a little bit late. And this place that he always wanted to meet, much later, like when I would start to work with him on writing projects, and I would like spend time at his apartment and, you know, spend the night there sometimes stuff, I realized that this restaurant that he picked that he always wanted to meet at was literally across the street from his apartment. But still, he managed to be consistently late.
That's impressive. That's impressive. Now, were you doing give them an argument at this point, or did that come out of out of the appearances you were doing on his show?
Yeah, it came out of the appearance I was doing on his show. So I did. Yeah, so I did a weekly segment on a show called The Debunk for I don't know, a year or so, and then after he passed, I wanted to keep it going in some form, but it didn't quite sit right to sort of try to do that without him, because it was so much of the what was good about those segments, right, was the interaction and what was, and just the way that, like, you know, I mean, mostly, like, every once in a while, right, like, I would say something funny, and it was, like, the best thing about it for me, because I'd sort of, like, he'd be, like, you know, reaching for, you know, he'd, like, have, like, just reached for a beer or something, and he would, like, just pause in the way to his mouth, because he was smiling. I was like, okay, I got him, right, you know, right. But, like, usually I was the straight man, right? I mean, I was like just kind of trying to earnestly get through the segment while he was riffing. I think what was special about that, you know, was so bound up with him, you know, I didn't want to do it without him, but I wanted to do similar kinds of things. So that's when Give Them an Argument started, shortly, it was like August 2020 or something like that. But, And I was also actually, I did catch part of Bhaskar's segment, and I would just, which is one of the clips that we showed on Give Them an Argument on Monday, was of me and Bhaskar, I think when we actually met, which was on TMBS, and Michael was yanking my chain about basically my thinking that astrology was bullshit, which he thought was lame. Or at least maybe that I would just say it, right? You know, he thought was lame. And he started doing this thing for a while where he would always bring up astrology when we started to talk, like every time. And so he did that, and, you know, and I said something about it, and, you know, and I don't know, maybe Bhaskar started too, and he was like, no, you guys don't bring that nerd shit on the show.
That's funny. That's really funny. All right, so tell me about the clip that you have today.
Yeah, so I thought about a few different things, because a lot of what, you know, I mean, a lot of the sort of fondest memories are along the lines of what we were just talking about, you know, but and I also, you know, and, you know, so I thought about doing something along those lines, or something that would have to, you know, that where he's being funny. By the way, for what it's worth, I know what people mean when they say that he wasn't punching down, right? He wasn't doing anything that would be, like, cruel to, you know, to groups that are already having a hard time, all that, right? But, like, also I will say he explicitly to me multiple times said, oh, I punch down is fine, right? You know, you know, who made up that rule, you know? But yeah, so I thought about those, or one ones where he's, like, doing the kind of analysis that Bhaskar played. But the one I picked, I hope hits, like, a slightly different register, and captures some of what I think of as kind of the high point of TMBS, just before everything locked down. So this is the last live show in Brooklyn. And it's the very end of the show, and Michael had just done something that was huge in his life, given his interests, which is that he'd gone down to Brazil and interviewed Lula da Silva. I remember when I was there, I was at his apartment in January. He was, like, doing all these planning meetings and stuff for that over the phone. And when I was back this weekend of that last live show, which ended up being the last time I saw him in person, because Jennifer and I were already living out of state at that point. You know, I remember he had a picture of Lula, you know, in, like, of him and Lula in, like, in his apartment, and sort of a place of prominence, So that was huge for him. And we were talking, and that he was talking about that at the end of the live show. And so you kind of see him talking a little bit about what he built up, with TMBS and this kind of network of people he brought together, and then played this clip of Lula that was really significant to him.
All right, let's watch this clip. This is from February 7th, 2020.
Wow. All right, folks, here's what we're going to do. We're actually going to, in a minute, play a video that I want to leave you on before we come back on stage. So we're actually going to go off stage, play this video in a minute, and then we're going to be wrapped. But I just want to say, first of all, first and foremost, thanks to each and every one of you. I have enormous appreciation. I'm so honored. I'm genuinely humbled by the community that we've built. I want to say that everybody on this stage, I value beyond words. Alona, thank you so much. I can't wait to have you back on. I really miss you. Matt Binder, you're awesome. We go back from the beginning, and it's amazing watching you grow and doing this awesome podcast and continuing the video work. Doomed. Ben Burgess is a fucking master, a good friend. Harvey K, we learn from so much and we love. I'm so glad that Brandon Sutton is a friend. The discourse is amazing. It's the smartest thing out there.
It's Van Jones now.
Matt and David, I love you guys. I could not do it without you. And I just want to say, before we play this clip, and this clip you've seen before, it's just a tone I want to set before we come back out on stage and say bye while we're standing up here. But last year, this is the first live show we did, was a year ago at this venue, and we filled it. There's more people here this year. We're going to multiple venues across the country, and things are really growing, and it's really important. We actually play a real role in this process, and it's dependent and connected with all of you. So thank you. And thank you for everybody who's spreading the word. And I also want to say last year I talked about Lula. Lula was in jail. I had a person who contacted me from a congressional office who said, I like your show. What can we do? I'm not really sure. There's very little energy about this. And look, things are still very bad in Brazil, here, everywhere else. But a year later, Lula's out, and I went and fucking interviewed him. In São Paulo, Lula Livre.
Hey.
That would not happen without all of you. And I just want, we're actually going to play a clip in a minute. We're going to move the couch so you can see the subtitles. But this is the same speech that Lula gave the day before he turned himself in for this totally corrupt process. And I want people to remember this attitude and feel this momentum and feel this optimism and feel this realness about how dark things can be, but also light on the other side. So we're going to set this up. We got to start moving the couch, if we could get off the couch so people could read the subtitles.
Also, Michael wants all you to know that he interviewed Lula.
That's really what this is all about. That's a major honor. Thanks all of you. And so what we're going to do, and also after the show, there's merch for sale, I guess, because I won't say that on the other side. But we're going to come out and say bye to everybody and connect with you guys right after this is over. But we do want to play this clip and thank all of you so much. We'll be right back.
Não adiantam tentar evitar que eu ande por esse país, porque tem milhões e milhões de Lula, de Bolo, de Manuela, de Dilma Rousseff para andar por mim. Não adianta tentar acabar, sabe, com as minhas ideias. Elas já estão pairando no ar e não tem como prendê-las. Não adianta tentar parar o meu sonho, porque quando eu parar de sonhar, eu sonharei pela cabeça de vocês e pelo sono de vocês. Não adianta achar que tudo vai parar o dia que o Lula tiver infarte. É bobagem, porque o meu coração baterá pelo coração de vocês e são milhões de corações. Os poderosos podem matar uma, duas ou três rosas, mas jamais conseguirão deter a chegada da primavera, e a nossa luta é em busca da primavera.
And that was the ending of that show, more or less. And Michael couldn't have been more excited at the prospect of having interviewed Lula. And he was, you know, in terms of like the news that we got of Lula in this country, he was, one of the biggest conduits, I think, in terms of like reporting or, you know, and following what was going on and getting people sort of invested in this.
Yeah. I mean, I listened to Michael's show a little bit, like a few episodes, I think even before I met him, because I think my friend Mark Warren had sort of suggested it to me. And certainly afterwards, you know, I was like catching up on a lot of what he'd already done. And I remember a time, right, when I was like, okay, we're going to do Lula again, huh? Okay.
Right,
I've kind of heard this, you know, let's maybe skip ahead. But I will say, like, just that kind of charisma, like, of how much he cared about it and how well he was able to communicate why it mattered, right? I mean, like, by the end, I was pretty fixated on it too, right? I mean, the first article I ever wrote for Jackman ended up being, you know, being about the Lula, you know, prosecution. And, you know, Michael had this way of getting you to care about what he cared about and to sort of see, sort of get you to see what he saw in it and like why he, you know, I mean, cause on some level you think, okay, well, this is an unjust thing that happened. The world's full of unjust things that happen, right? I mean, like what's the sort of point of entry here? And I think that beyond being the confluence of a lot of his interests in international relations and US imperialism and Latin America and all of that, right? I mean, I think he also, like, some of the appeal of Lula for him was just that, you know, even though, you know, Lula is president of Brazil in the past, I hope again, actually so far the polls seem to show that, you know, that he's leading Bolsonaro, but, you know, he was, you know, I mean, he wasn't anything too terribly radical. I mean, it was a center-left president who did some really, you know, some modest things that made a big difference in a situation of massive poverty. But I think a lot of what appealed to him, you know, about him for Michael was just the fact that this is such an effective communicator that, you know, that like the way that Lula would talk about politics that, I mean, obviously he's kind of at his most poetic in there, which is sort of, I don't know. It's a almost surreal effect with the kind of Tom Waits voice and you know, hearing it in Portuguese with the subtitles. But you know, but I think like a lot of the Lula clips they play, you know, the way that Lula would talk about sort of making sure that people had their material needs met so they could, you know, buy some coffee and free time to watch soccer and things like that. I mean, he had this like very direct way of communicating like why some kind of left program was important to people, and that, you know, and I think that. I think Michael really responded to that. And off topic, but I will say I did notice you started smiling when he mentioned the merch table.
Yes. Someone just IM'd Chris Burdick. I have to say my favorite part of that live Michael clip is him making his guests on stage move a couch.
Fair.
Ben Burgess, thank you so much. Really appreciate you bringing that here and coming today. And I know how close you guys were. And thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
All right, thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Ben.
All right. We're going to bring in our last guest for the day who worked on a TMBS. See, from day one, I think.
From like day four, maybe. We'll get him on here in a second.
He, you may also know him from Left Reckoning with Matt. How do I
Leech?
Pronounce his last name?
Yeah.
It's Lech.
Lech.
Leech.
I got into my Bohemian family history over the vacation, so there's some on that. But let's get to David here.
Ooh, wow! All right, here he is, David Griscom. Hello, David. Thanks for coming on.
I'm really happy to be here, y'all.
Hey, David.
Hey. So, all right. So, how did you end up working on TMBS?
I mean, I just got to say thank you all for putting this all together. It's been really sweet listening in, and like one thing that's so incredible about Michael is like how many people he like brought together out there. And also it was like, as I got to know him over the years, you know, you'd always meet somebody and I would think it's like, oh, that must be some like long lost friend. And then you talk to them later and it's like, oh, I've only known Michael for like 2 weeks. Right.
Yeah, no, I met him. I just met him on the way over here. He was one of the most social human beings I've ever met, actually.
But, I was really lucky. When I went to school, I was taught by Luke Mayville. Who is, was guest professor at American University where I went to school. And I had just like sort of popped up to New York City trying to find a way to get into, you know, the left media scene. I'd been writing a little bit. Anyways, I got coffee with Luke and he said, well, you got to meet my friend, Michael. We went and studied abroad in Turkey together. And, you know, I'd like to introduce you to him. And I'm like, okay. So he sets it up for me and Michael to have a phone call. And the first time Michael, you know, backs out and I had no idea who Michael was or anybody, you know, who I was going to be introduced to at that point. So Michael ends up calling me though. And we just start chatting, like just like straight up chatting about politics. You know, some stuff about Bernie, some left things. And I just, for whatever reason, happened to mention, one person who I really, really hated, was Sam Harris. And of course, and of course, Michael then launched in and we spent like 45 minutes on the phone, just like making fun of Sam Harris and his fans and deconstructing his arguments. And it's just sort of funny knowing Michael and where all that all ended up that like what really brought us together was like our first hate. Right. Because Michael was a really sweet and kind person. But, you know, he had his sights set on also knocking down reactionaries and people who we thought were damaging folks' lives. And yeah, no. So I had that conversation. I didn't think anything was going to come from it. And then he started asking me to come into the studio on Tuesday nights when he recorded. And then just like two or three episodes in, he was having me do some different kind of work with him, you know, sort of administrative stuff. And then I just was sort of brought into the show. So it was very fast moving and like, you know, I feel really blessed and, you know, it always gives me a lot of confidence to know that, like, at that point in my life, I didn't really know what I was doing or anything like that. But Michael saw something in me that he really wanted to cultivate and gave me that opportunity and, like, just a really, really sweet guy. And he did that for so many people. I know he brought a lot of people, either being notoriety from bringing them on the show to interview them or other folks who he entrusted with doing work with him. Like, he really was somebody who was trying to build up people. And it was really, really a true blessing to be a part of that.
So what, tell us about the clip you brought.
Oh, well, I didn't know I was supposed to bring it.
Oh, that's all right.
Sorry, that's my bad.
That was Matt's fault. All right. Well, that's okay.
But we are, you know, what? If I could do a little, Bhaskar mentioned it on the, during his interview, a commentary that Michael and I worked on called Sympathy Is Not Solidarity, which was from TMBS 120. So we're going to be playing that and breaking that down a little bit later tonight on Left Reckoning.
Sweet.
People want to check that out.
Excellent.
Yeah, you guys should all check out their stream tonight, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is a good opportunity to plug that.
Left Reckoning.
Yeah, we don't quite have Michael's sense.
What about your merch?
Yeah.
What about your merch?
I mean, Matt's literally wearing the merch right now.
I'm wearing merch, but this is pre-release, so people just have to anticipate
it. Oh, don't look at it.
Let me see, what does that look like? Whoa.
That's really
nice.
Cool.
And I got to say, I texted David.
Turn on your mic.
I texted David earlier about this, but the Left Reckoning hat that David had on in the Griscom stream from last week is amazing.
Oh, I want to see it.
Can't wait for it to be out. I'm going to cop it immediately.
It's going to be coming out like probably by the end of the week. I built a website for us. I showed it to my fiance, and she said it looked like trash, so I'm redoing the website.
Nice.
And hopefully we will be launching that very soon.
Yeah, and I'll just speak for David. Like, we talked about this almost immediately after Michael's passing, but like it's tough because we really enjoyed producing that show. Like, it was so much fun. I expected to do it for a long, long time and basically just riding Michael's expert coattails. and actually, like, trying to, you know, maintain some sense of that community with David has been really fulfilling. And then you also see how difficult it is to also be as widely read as Michael and able to interpret that for folks in a way that is not dry and is actually funny.
Right. Yeah, he had a tremendous. I mean, he was 24/7. It feels like.
Yeah, I don't know.
In terms, no, of he was working. He was working all the time. I remember, like, it used to annoy me a little bit, to be honest. But I would get texts from him at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
About like an idea for a segment, and then, you know, he wasn't expecting me to work at that, you know, part of the night. But like, you're like, okay, you know, let's get this and that done. It's like, dude, you gotta go to sleep. Like, you need to take a little bit of a break. I mean, he really was working so hard. I mean, from doing Majority Report to TMBS to the other projects that he was doing. On top of all that, he, you know, jumps into the Jackman program, which was a huge lift. I mean, the guy really, really cared so deeply about what he was trying to put out there and, like, fostering, you know, a community. I mean, again, I think what Bhaskar said was really correct, is that, like, you know, Michael didn't just, like, see his job as, like, an educator, but he also saw it as trying to, like, build a community that was, like, open and was accepting of different folks, and understand that people don't all come from the same place. And that's why, you know, he got so frustrated, especially during the pandemic, about some of the kind of, you know, like, Vampire Castle stuff, you know, getting really quickly, being really quick to sort of, you know, cancel folks or push people away. Like, he really was somebody who wanted the left to be successful and not just sort of like a small niche cultural movement.
Right.
And, you know, his loss has been so, so damaging to that project. But I think it's important to try to remember all those lessons that he was able to teach folks, because they have a lot of weight still.
Yeah, and you know, on that the Bates clip with the on Israel and the, when he uses apartheid, the words like that, like he coached Mafia. He coached that answer in a way that was like accepting of, or like he didn't pull any punches with what he was saying, but it was still soft in a way. Like
the way that he addressed her, he was not going at her. He was going hard, but it was off.
He was trying to include her, almost.
Yeah, a bigger picture.
We're part of an audience. Here's what I'm projecting on the screen, as opposed to it like going through her. He wasn't trying to change her mind per se. It was, here's the case. You assess it. But it's also, there's also, the, you know, what you also have to remember is there's whatever, 100, 200 other people in that room. And that, and in many respects, like, that's also the audience. And he makes sure he's not alienating those people by the way that he treats her.
And that's easy, or that's not easy to do, in that when you feel like maybe you're being challenged or attacked, it's so easy to be defensive. And then when you're defensive, it's more of a one-on-one interaction. You lose that larger perspective. That's something I struggle with, right? And combating people with different political views. He never seemed to have that issue, as long as I knew him, at least.
He really, like, tried to take people at their best, and I don't want to create media drama during this, so I won't name the podcast, but I remember I was telling Matt this story a little while ago, that during the pandemic, one of these, you know, lefty podcasts did an interview with Steve Bannon, and Michael did a quick clip on it saying, here's some things I think they didn't do great, and here's some things that I think that they did very, very, very well. And then, you know, it takes like a week before, I guess, they found it, but immediately, you know, just tweet threads attacking him and coming at him. And he was so beyond himself of like, you know, I really was, you know, it's like, I was trying to, you know, bring them in and praising them and saying how great of a job that they do. And like him just not being able to calculate the fact that like this group of people, like their whole thing is just creating up, you know, creating like needless like internet drama. And really with like his big heart, just expecting everybody to sort of see where he's, you know, coming from a place of, you know, open heartedness. I don't know. It was a sweet moment that I remember very fondly. Just sort of his perspective on the world was one that I think I wish that more people would have, frankly.
Yeah, indeed. Well, David, folks can check out Left Reckoning tonight for that in particular this segment about sympathy and solidarity, or they're not being the same. Thanks so much. I really appreciate you coming on.
Of course. Appreciate all of you.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
All right, folks. Well, we're just about out of time, but let's read some IMs so that we're not going to have a chance for any phone calls, but we'll read some IMs here. And because we have, let's see. Oh, a lot of IMs. NJ Mailman. 2 years since Michael has passed. I still miss him and his comedy. Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Sam, Matt, Jamie, Binder, Emma, for all helping me move left and leaving libertarian ideas in the garbage. Left is best. Love you all. Matthew from Indianapolis. The YouTube live feed is super quiet. That was at the beginning of the show. Daredevil. Emma, I have a feeling you're the next Betty White. You'll live a century and be culturally relevant the whole time. Those countless cashews will keep you going forever.
Nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Fossil fuels.
Once love we get Golden Girls.
Everyone over the age of 70, we can finally address the requirement for international just transformation from the burning of fossil fuels without serious discussions of changing economic focus. Okay. Well, we'll get to that another day. A-Square, so good to remember Michael today, and will be so good to hear Leisha, his friends and fans, miss Joshua's voice and insights, and so looking forward to it. Next year, maybe do this on his birthday versus his day of passing. Emma, appreciate your righteous rants and expressions on discussions about the theocracy afoot. You know, that's interesting because, like, I had contemplated that to celebrate his birthday as opposed to his passing. And I don't, you know, maybe I just need to read up about, like, you know, the implications. For me, I wanted this just to be a celebration of his life. And I think that, like, you know, we did this in the days after his passing. Back in 2020, and we did it around this time. And I guess in Jewish tradition, you go, and which is my tradition, not necessarily Michael's. You go and visit the grave, and, you know, but I wanted this to be sort of both a celebration of his life, but also, you know, look, when we all do this in some fashion or another, and I'm saying, like, all of us here who are doing, like, a political talk show, and we want this stuff, you know, Bhaskar sort of said, like, essays are, you know, transitory. We want our bodies of work to resonate beyond just the audience that we tell it to and whatnot. And we want it to be sort of ripple through space and through time. And I think that, like, I know that if I was to have, you know, passed on at the time that Michael had, I believe that I would, and I believe that Michael would have wanted, like, what's going to get my stuff out there the most. And
my sense is he would not get hung up on, like, if it was his birththday or his death day. Like,
without
he might laugh at the just this.
He'd want both.
The parsing. Yeah,
both.
He might want both.
But I do think that, like, the calculation would be like, there's more drama associated with the day I died.
That's true.
And that if that's gonna get like more, you know, views, and it's the stuff is gonna travel more, then do that day. That's sort of honestly my calculation. And I think that's, like, consistent with his idea of, like, you do what's going to make it win. And don't get too hung up in the sort of, like, the stuff at the end of the day that you can't sort of, like, you know, that and a quarter will get you a phone call. It's got to be like, you know, get me part of that quarter. No. And so that was just my sort of, like, thinking about this. And I think he would even say, like, there's probably going to be more people out there in July, you know, August, people take vacation or something. Like, I don't know. Like, that's sort of with his theory. Let's see. Vermont Ben, I'm poorly paraphrasing, but my favorite, Michael Brooks quote is, attack ideas and institutions, but always be kind to people. Yeah, that's, it's be ruthless,
with institutions.
Institutions and kind, I think it is, to people.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's the gist.
I don't know if we actually,
like, he, that's a funny thing. Like, I don't know if we actually have him on video saying that explicit quote, but it's like it was his basic rule.
Yeah. Lizard Magic 91. Devastated when I learned of Michael's passing. Loved his insight. Double whammy, though, with him and Linkin Park frontman Chester Bennington both passing on my birthday. Keep up the good work, everyone. Michael would be proud, I think. Two kids in a trench coat. A little disappointed you guys are wearing your Slavic tuxedo and gold chain, and you're not in honor of Michael. But for real, I do, still to this day, when Sam complains about something he's annoyed with, I hear Michael's Sam impression in my head. Love you guys and miss Michael. Rest in power. Eric from Iowa. Rest in power, Michael. Courier, I'm extremely grateful that Michael dedicated so much energy to documenting his thoughts and conversations. He will continue to do good in perpetuity. I love and appreciate you all. Sorry for our loss. Left is, as ever, is best. Would love to hear the old fun half bump today as it includes Michael. Maybe that's, we'll end the show that way. Okay. Elcon Imp. Please replay the time Jordan Peterson called into MR and screamed at Michael. That was somebody doing it. We got to try and find that. Michael Brooks, Kevin from Philadelphia, is the seminal voice of my political realignment from standard liberal to cosmopolitan socialist left. In these dark times, his words echo in my mind to keep true to my ideals, be ruthless with systems, be kind to people. Rest in power, Michael Jamal Brooks. Southern socialist Michael Brooks was so instrumental in moving people left, so smart and funny, compassionate. Rest in power, King. Left is best. Josh from Tucson. Michael Brooks was the guiding light that pulled me out of the intellectual dark web. Love you, brother. Rest in power. What would Michael say about Vagina Land? Judy Rudiani. I'll never forget Michael. Listening to him changed my life. His compassion and solidarity with the third world gives me hope for the future. After hearing Michael a few times, I was able to see Sam Harris for who he really was. I am so grateful. Holy crap. The easy with which Brandon Sutton picked up his end of the couch on the TMS live video. Ben really struggled. LOL. Glass of Siegel. Michael's Bernie was not opposed to accepting help from Putin in the same vein as Trump. What am I supposed to do? Say no? He's very good at things about me. Remains one of the funniest things I've ever heard. JB Davis, I never got to hear Mike. My condolences on his loss. He sounds like a good person. Well, you can. You can go back and watch Michael.
You should.
Demian, are you guys going to have a Hassan on today? He said some really great stuff about Michael recently. No, we just we ran out of time and people. There's so many people we could have brought on. Chris W., I started listening 2017. Michael really helped solidify my politics as well as laugh at the insanity of modern day politics. I was shocked and devastated when I heard he passed. Rest in power, Michael. Chris from Nashville. There's hardly a day that goes by I don't say to myself and others, be kind to people, ruthless to systems. Rest in power, Michael. Left is best. Captain Fun. I'm sure I'm butchering the exact words, but the idea that we can be kind to people and ruthless to systems has become a lens through which I see the world. I'm endlessly thankful for that. Rest in power, Michael. Slappy Tubbs. I miss Michael every day. Such a loss to humanity. Super missed when it comes to MR International News. I love the MR crew forever, but you have to admit he brought in a unique perspective that is just not there now. Indeed. Clown Shoe Mike. Saul, your dad probably isn't pooping for 20 minutes. As a fellow, dad being in the bathroom is the only time any peace and quiet. He's right. Frank in Buffalo. I still watch TMBS content weekly. I learned so much from him, and I really think he has the potential to bring leftism mainstream with his unique ability to blend history, politics, and comedy. Left Oki. I listened to yesterday's show before today's show, listening about the extreme heat. It was 112 in Oklahoma yesterday. There was a UPS driver that died in California. Another passed out on a porch in Arizona, which made national news. OSHA is now at our hub. As I was walking in, OSHA stopped me for an interview where I was completely honest. If it wasn't for Michael, you and the MR crew, I would have never had the courage to talk to OSHA or stand up to my corrupt union in my right to work state.
Nice.
Rest in peace, Michael Brooks. Thank you, brother. Good for you. Admin Lefty, Michael Brooks was my entry point to the Majority Report as someone who had become a bit despondent about politics after the 2016 election. Brooks reminded me to keep pushing, stay passionate, and lead with empathy. Emma VeggieTales. I was not a viewer prior to Michael's passing. Having seen many of his clips, he seems like a caring, funny, and intelligent presence that is greatly missed in today's left discourse. I wish everyone a spirit of peace in remembrance of Michael. Thank you. That's very sweet. Temlo Fink, happy Friends Wednesday, folks. Hope everyone is doing okay. Rest in power, Michael Brooks. An update regarding the heat wave here in Britain. Temperatures have reduced considerably today. According to Mayor Sadiq Khan, yesterday was the London Fire Brigade's busiest day since World War II. Jeez. As when Britain was carpet bombed, and many folks in London resorted to sheltering in subway stations. Thankfully, no one died as a result in fires yesterday in London. Chardonnay Socialists, I miss Michael mocking you, Sam. What a team you two were, and what a team you have now. Love you all. V, missed you every day, Michael, but if not for you being you, the left would be less fractured if you were still around. Dying laughing at Sam assassinating Seth Rich and hurting his shoulder. Ow, my shoulder. How did Sam get so much sexier over the last 2 years, says Rube Davin. Thank you. In all seriousness, I really like Miss Michael and have had so many great memories of belly laughing while at work, revealing in truly hilarious impressions, voice, and sheer wit he exuded on MR. Truly a rare combination of insight, compassion, and all-around coolness. Michael lives forever, left his best. Thames Darwin. Don't know you're going to take calls today and probably couldn't call anyway, but I want to say something about Michael. Sorry in advance for the length. I met Michael a couple of times and a guest once on his show, but even before then, he would reach out to me on a personal level, sending DMs to say hello, ask how things were going, offering comfort when there was a death in the family, etc. What I found out after he died was how many of us he reached out to on a regular basis. What was remarkable is how it didn't seem any less special to know how many people he connected with on a personal level. He was just an enormously good and kind person. We all miss him tremendously. Nola Lefty. We should recruit that radio guy from Seattle from yesterday to be a left's Dave Rubin. Then once AOC is old enough to run for president, he could admit to voting for her.
We need someone in the reverse.
I got a story about that dude, though. I don't think he's the one. But we'll read it tomorrow. Between the 101, Michael is my hero. He changed my life. Back in 2019, I started getting more and more involved in organizing, pretty much changed my career in the direction of my life. By the end of the year, I was actually hired by Bernie. I've continued working in organizing for electoral activists and union spaces. I kind of think about him every time I do this stuff. His philosophies of organizing and analysis for growing power is the tether for everything I do. Thanks so much to everyone. Love you all so much. Left is best forever. Jonathan from Jersey. Sam, first time, long time. I never had the good fortune to meet Michael, but I always felt deep affection and admiration for his work. In honor of Michael, I'm upping my membership to the Cernovich butt smooch level. I sincerely appreciate the work you and the crew do each and every day, which helps keep me informed, motivated, and sane. While times are tight for a lot of people, I urge others and their memberships to up their memberships too if they're in a position to do so in honor of Michael and in support of the show. Thank you all for your amazing work. Left and Fuji apples are best. Thank you very much. I will say also, I think you can still join the Patreon for Left for TMBS to help draw funds for the project Leisha is doing. And we're also talking, Bhaskar and I were talking the other day about maybe trying to set up some other way of like keeping Michael's legacy going, but we'll have more of that in the future. And his book is also going to be, we're going to issue as an audio book. I may be working on that with, we'll see. North from Tampa, wise elders of the Dobe Kung believe that people didn't die until they were forgotten by the living. We will never forget Michael.
I mean, that's what's so chilling about listening to that Lula speech. And, you know, I remember watching that with Michael and being like, that's awesome. You lose people early, but the thing still goes on. And never, I mean, surreal that it applies to Michael.
Yeah. Yeah. Gordo, I'm thoroughly convinced that if not for Michael's great work with the Jacobin, the political horrors in Brazil and Bolivia would not have received the overall coverage it deserved. He was a gem. I'm deeply grateful for him for opening my eyes to foreign politics, particularly in South America. Jonathan Armstead, the best part of being a listener and IMer was getting a laugh out of Michael, a guy who frequently made me laugh. I had the privilege of having that happen twice, once when he bellowed out after I said that Donald Trump pee tape was a mistake from Trump telling one of the prostitutes You're an eight. That's good. You're an eight. The other was when he tweeted to the world that my Nation of Islam mixtape Spotify playlist was genius. Those meant the world to me. Yeah, making him laugh was really fun. The rural
You're
juror,
an eight.
Are you just getting that now?
No, I got it the whole time. It was just coming at me in waves.
On the anniversary of Michael's passing, can you tell us the cause of death and whether or not it was at all preventable so that we might be able to learn from it? I think Leisha has made this public.
Yeah.
Michael had a congenital disease that made him susceptible to blood clots. And he was not aware of that. And there was something like a 30 or 40% chance that this would have happened to him. Had he been aware of that he had that, which was not something that you would have discovered through just a random physical, you would, you know, maybe had he had done like a DNA test, they would have seen that you have a propensity for this. So it was really not preventable outside of that, I think. So, you know, I don't even know, you know, one never knows with this. Like, he was, you know, not feeling great. And, you know, if there wasn't a pandemic, would he have been more inclined to go see a doctor? You know, who knows? You know, I certainly put off, you know, everybody put off stuff at that time. But did it, how he was feeling, was it enough? Did it amount, like, you know, so there's really nothing. I mean, it's so senseless. I think, you know, sadly, I think there's, well, not sadly, but I think the reality is there's a lot more to learn from his life, frankly, than his death, other than make as much as you can of the time that you have. Make it count. Amish Kami, rest in power, Michael. Miss you so much. Your laughter during all these hellish times would have been very cathartic. I painted a portrait of Michael last week. I would love it if you shared it on the show. It's not coming up. Send us an email, and we will show it in the coming days. I can tell it's on Instagram, but it's just not coming up. What's truly you? Michael's Rand Paul impression was great. That's true, too. I forgot about that one. Rest in peace, Michael. I truly admired his holistic approach to politics. It inspires me to be better. May his work live on. Tim from Minneapolis. I did not start regularly watching MR until after Michael passed away, but I can't encourage folks enough to check out the re-airs of the Michael Brooks Show and to consider becoming a patron to the Michael Brooks Legacy Project for the post-game reruns. They have an evergreen quality, and it's been a good opportunity to reflect on that time. 1996, Sam, I never met Michael, but his politics have had a huge influence on me over the years. Something you might find funny, I was listening to MR with my Republican brother, my older dad in 2020 on a long road trip to visit my sick grandfather. My dad said, "Who is this know-it-all?" And after listening for a couple of minutes, 20 minutes later, they were both laughing at Michael's various impressions and the way that he incorporated humor into the discussion. He brought people in with his style who would never have stayed engaged, and that was very unique. Love to all, left his best. Alana from Ohio. Hey, I'm our crew. What are your thoughts on the Ohio Senate gubernatorial races? Ryan has been holding a strong and growing lead against J.D. Vance for weeks now, and the campaign seems to be doing well. Is that true?
Not from what I've seen in terms of an average of polling. I was just on 538 yesterday. The aggregate seems to be, 84 and 100. Polls updated five minutes ago from 538 says that J.D. Vance wins. So who knows? I hope that that's not the case.
There's been 100 polls of that race?
Their model has it like sampling 100 outcomes. And so right now it's 84 and 100 versus 16%. It's 84% to 16% in terms of their model saying who's going to win. But
we'll see.
We'll see.
Chris from VA.
I just dispute
the notion.
Let's
hear from John from San Antonio before we do anything.
No, I just dispute the notion that he's leading in polls.
Yeah, I don't think he's leading in polls. But Chris from VA, my favorite memory of Michael was when he had gone into a silent retreat and called into the show. He could only respond by pressing buttons on the phone, so he was giving him hell. The comedic timing on the tone beeps was incredible. Well, to be fair, Michael didn't know we were doing that.
What was that?
Michael went on a silent retreat, and then we just did a bit.
Oh,
where we
yeah.
pretended like he was calling in.
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't even know if he knew that we ever did that.
Well, I might have told him, I'm not sure.
Disco Stew. One of my favorite impressions of Michael was him impersonating 1930s Ezra Klein, expressing shock that the Nazis meant what they said. It was a Friday show with Cliff Schecter about a year before he passed, which, by the way, how come Cliff never comes on anymore? Just, I don't know. We just, I think part of it was we just wanted to mix things up. And part of it is I think our politics diverged a little bit. Come shower with Crowder. Michael helped me through periods of incredible depressions with his humor and insight. I still think about him at least a couple of times a week. Much love, MR. Michael from Bavaria. Sam is getting cucked by Joshua Kahn Russell. Sun's out, guns out. Michael would have appreciated that. 412.
Both Matt and I have our guns out, so you didn't get the memo.
No. I wanted to share what I think is the most brilliant piece of comedy Michael ever did. Over the course of 2015 and 2016, his right-wing Mandela character slowly morphed from a bland movement conservative who repeated boilerplate talking points into a New York City scumbag who hung out in Trump Tower with Joey No Socks. It reflected perfectly what was happening with the GOP over that time. Yes. In fact, I think we played a clip of that. That's what I was saying. Like, somebody could be listening going like, it sounds like Mandela. It sounds like Mandela has a right wing. It sounds like Mandela's like a mafiosa that is doing Trump.
It's like the most we've ever used FOMO because people have to listen more to understand.
Exactly. Parasocialist relationship. Michael's impact was huge across all media, but his book showed a very specific talent for laying out coherent visions of the future through a critique of systemic issues and institutional forces. Buy Against the Web and read it twice, friends. Michael Sam Slavenderly G. Discovered TMBS, MR, and Rebel HQ in 2018 after my mother was murdered. Oy.
Jesus.
Sorry. Michael was instrumental in deepening my critical understanding as well as my empathy for the world during some of my darkest days. The anniversaries only get stranger, but the love is always real. Thank you for all for everything. Left is best. Benito. Getting to watch a live TMBS episode in studio was my experience I'll remember for the rest of my life. Michael generously invited me to sit in after meeting him first at a Chicago live show and then at Shahid Buttar fundraiser in Astoria. I miss him and his insights every day. I tried to make him laugh with stupid IMs and Discord messages during his shows. When I succeeded, it was the highlight of my day. All right. I'm going to read 10 more of these, folks. I'm sorry. We've got so many. J-Man Raps. I was watching TYT when Anna announced Michael's death, and it was very emotionally, obviously. Michael was very smart and would not get caught up in the bullshit. R.I.P. left his best. Josh from Chicago. For me, Michael was the essence of his quote, be kind to people and ruthless to systems. Michael's kindness and his ability to see the best in people is radical, but I also appreciate just how incredibly clear-eyed he was about his politics and morals, even as they continued to evolve. His voice was particularly missed during the war against Ukraine when we saw people on the left engaging in a bizarre galaxy brain theorizing. Michael understood what many didn't, that in order for the left to win, we had to have a broad as coalition as possible and also be inclusive to people as possible. I often recommend his book to liberals who want to consider taking the next step on the left spectrum. On a personal note, I also miss him as a friend. I remember when he and I first went to get brunch. I had just gotten into a gnarly bike crash and had bandages on my wrists. He spent half the time checking in on me to make sure I was okay. If I was going through something, he would be one of the first to check in on me. As far as characters go, nothing will top right-wing Martin Luther King. Quick story, the morning after the 2018 Super Bowl, which featured a bizarre Dodge MLK ad, I burst out laughing uncontrollably as he began doing his capitalist MLK impression about why people should buy a new Dodge. A woman came up to me and asked why I was laughing so much. I plugged Michael but couldn't bring myself to say without context that I was laughing at a bizarre right-wing MLK impression. That's funny. Attorney Andrew, short list of impression bitch I wish we could have heard from Mike. Cops overdosing by touching fentanyl, Kristen Sinema, The People's Party, Havana Syndrome, Jackson Hinkle, and Sam taking 20-hour dumps. Our experience of these people and events is worse off without the joy of hearing his take on them. Christo, one of my favorite spontaneous bits was Mitt Romney as an overeager, easy-pleasing, to please lapdog genius. Yeah, that was very funny. Joe Bevan, one thing I do find stunning about these clips is how much hotter Sam has gotten post-COVID. It's like when Steve Carroll became a silver fox. Thank you. That's very kind. JJ Cool, AMR, thank you to everyone for the great show today. I'm forever grateful for all the time I got to listen to Michael. Sam, your riffing with Michael was so good, you guys could make the most boring subjects become must-see TV. Thanks for all the laughs and insights. Left is best. Eric from San Diego. Michael was the first and only parasocial death in my life that caused me to cry from grief. I still miss his voice dearly. Left is best. Train Boy. Is the location of Brooks' grave public knowledge? I think many people in the audience would like to pay their respects. I don't know that it is. I'll ask Leisha about that. Congressional baseball fan. Michael was excellent at mocking those deserving criticism, but he was also quietly adept at providing gentle critique and guidance. He helped me be a better IMer, and I think of him every day. Play ball. He would like that. Mark Monkey. I cannot express how much this show and Michael's presence meant to my forming of my politics. The show continues beautifully, so there's nothing taken away from what the show is now. But he had such an amazing way of delivering his message, educate and have it not boring. His comedy was wonderful, but I appreciate his sentiment more than anything else. I was a rare caller, but I remember calling in and talking about interracial relationships and the trouble that still exists within and outside of that community. It was very validating to hear some of those issues were shared from one of his past relationships. Thanks and rest in power, Michael. And the final I am of the show. Dave from Jamaica. That eternal hellfire got me sweating too, Sam. Michael's impressions always had me in stitches, but Bernie or Bus Bill and Cindy McCain, Chris Matthews. Oh yeah, it's Chris Matthews. I forgot about that too. Michael was very good at elevating folks. Having a theme song when calling in to ask him advice or questions was a humbling experience. Folks, thanks so much for watching today. Please pass around clips of Michael. Go back, watch some of the TMBS shows. If you can support his Patreon or the Legacy Project's Patreon, do that. You can check out the shows. I think you can still find the ones that he did with Anna. And we have shows in our, at the very least, you should be able to find clips of Michael from past shows. And DJ Dan Arkey has put out great compilations of his comedy. But pass them around, introduce people to him. That is both good, I think, for his legacy, but really good for those people and for our politics and all of it. So thanks so much for tuning in today. Bradley, Matt, Emma, great job today, guys. Emma will be here tomorrow manning the ship. See you then.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey Sam, hey Andy, you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.